Ladies, gentlemen, hermaphrodites, freaks and geeks, all my friends, lovers and children, welcome to the podcast.
We're here.
Thank you very much once again for tuning in.
We're here.
My road dogs, Eddie Bravo and Mad Flava. Let me adjust this camera because we can't see you right.
What up? What up?
Is that better?
Yeah, bam. There we go.
Tuning in there.
Tuning in week number. I don't know what the fuck it is. It's week many. Many weeks. And we've been having a good fucking time. We had a good goddamn time in Boston. And we were talking about this yesterday, but we'll talk about it again just because Eddie's here. It was fucking crazy when I asked on stage how many people listened to the podcast. It's like this, the ability that you have when everybody went crazy. It was like this huge audience, and there was like, I'd say like 60% of them, 70% of them said they listened to the podcast.
Yeah, it was crazy.
So it's like, it's only going to keep doing that. It's all only as long as you make things that people think are interesting. It's only gonna like this is radio. This is just as powerful as any radio station that's ever existed.
Without the bullshit and the drama, and
yeah,
the
nothing,
contestants and all that shit. This is just straight up talking.
What the fuck happened to that camera? Did it move again?
All right, there we are.
I'm a
there.
Terrible cameraman.
Looking sharp. Brian's off on vacation.
Yeah, Brian is off in Ohio. With his lady friend.
All right. All
meeting
right.
The family.
Beautiful.
Having a good goddamn time. Right. Getting the freak on.
What's wrong with Eddie Bravo? What happened to Eddie Bravo? What's going on?
Eddie Bravo is Eddie Bravo. What's going on? You're a strange character.
It's funny.
You will all understand Eddie Bravo when the 10th Planet reality show comes to light. 10th Planet Riverside, bitches. Respect.
It's funny because I was talking to you on the phone last week and you said that you went to see a shitty movie. But you're one of the few people like me that take a shitty movie and make it work for us. You know what I'm saying? Like, we really make it work for us. We see what the bad points are, and you said you watched The Expendables or whatever. And it's so weird how we learned that from Paul Mooney. We had a conversation once about when you're a comedian, you should get entertained.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something. The last 2 weeks, I've done something that has blown me apart. I went to see a different form of entertainment. I went to watch Eddie Bravo teach.
Oh, yeah, that's entertainment.
And the way that place is, the way you sit, it's like a big fucking stage. Like if I did a one-man show, I would do it there with the mats facing everything. And I started watching him. And the first week he taught this move where you're hitting the guy and then you roll and take his leg and the guy gives you an arm so you have three different options. And then last week he was, when you were there, by the way, you know the fucking move.
Just gotta let it go.
Like this, and you're hitting him, you're on his back. So you take this leg and you hook, double hook on this leg and you pull over. So he has
so you take his arm
options.
From Spiderweb?
Yeah.
Oh, no, no, the truck.
Really cool, really cool. But just the way Eddie was teaching.
Yeah, that's a trip. You remember
you
that.
Had George. Come on, dog. If I didn't remember,
come on, dog.
That means I thought you were just making shit up. I thought you were just being funny.
No,
because in the beginning of the DVD, you know, because at that point, you didn't really know the system at all.
I didn't know what
so
you were doing.
It was, that's the beauty of it, is you were just talking about Night of the Living Dead, and then I flip you with the butterfly hooks, and then...
No, no. So last week, you start on the guy's back with your two hooks in.
Yeah.
You hit the guy in the head. Yeah. He thinks you're going to choke him out, and you flip over. So you got this leg. You hook him with
Yeah, you take it to the truck, baby.
You got the truck. And it was really weird how I went home and it fucked with me that night. I was even doing comedy.
It affected you?
Like, it fucked with me. Like I thought about it when I left there. And then I went the other night, which was a very simple hold where it was controlling the guy with the underhook, which you're really good at, he said.
George Sotiropoulos is in town. He's been in town for the last 2 weeks, so we've been focusing on overhook butterfly stuff to rubber guard. So,
but the point being of the situation was that I was very intrigued while I was watching him.
Thank you.
Which I don't get intrigued by dick. I didn't go see Avatar. All these movies don't do dick to me.
Well, when someone's really good at something, when someone's really good at something and really good at speaking about that something, it's always fascinating.
But how he walks, he does it like a stand-up comic. He walks in a certain area, so people have to look at him. And he doesn't even know what he's doing. He doesn't know how, just being him, he commands attention. You know, he's not a big guy. He's not a flamboyant guy. But I couldn't take my fucking eyes off him.
Are you gay for Eddie?
No.
This feels like you're gay for Eddie.
I'm talking about what I learned this week. Sometimes how you go out.
I think Joey just came out to us.
I'm supposed to go to a fucking... I'm supposed to go to like the UCB theater and see some fucking guy that's not funny and be entertained. But I obviously...
Some of those guys are funny.
But I obviously went
to see
a jiu-jitsu class and was very entertained and was very
intrigued. Thank you very much,
and that was the whole point of this. It wasn't about the fucking UCB theater.
What the fuck is UCB?
It was about... you that you Thank really you locked much, me man. In.
Yes.
And it was very, you know, I've never.
Well, you know, you lock me in all the time, so Joe. You know straight, that shit. You know what I'm saying? So when you're on stage, you I lock my shit
this week.
In.
I learned something.
You know how fucking much great shit I talk about you to everybody.
That's why
I tell everybody.
My ears are ringing all the time. You know what I'm saying?
I tell everybody.
Game recognizes game, bitches.
Like originally with the 10th Planet Kush, originally it was going to be the both of us. But when Joey's around, I'm like, why would I want to put the fucking camera on me? I'm just going to keep it on Joey.
But it's
I can't really speak my mind anyways. I like being really honest. I can't really
right.
be that
you don't
honest.
Don't hurt people's feelings.
I can't really be that honest. Right. And Joey can just smash people. And you know what? It's hilarious.
I wonder if dudes get upset at some of your predictions. Marcus Davis.
I was like, Marcus Davis, burn the kilt.
No, he's got to
yes,
burn that
yes, you know what? Marcus Davis. Marcus Davis, Kenny Florian, I fucking love you guys, man. You know you're my dogs. You know what I'm saying? This is all entertainment. I didn't say this shit.
No, we didn't say, listen, the Kenny. I picked Kenny Florian to win. I'm
this
a big
is
fan
a YouTube
it.
Clip we're I, discussing.
I oh, I know, but check this out. What we're talking about actually is probably on YouTube right now. I uploaded it about 73.
Oh, my goodness.
Perfect fucking segue, right? Can we play it?
No, we can't.
We can't.
No,
okay, all right.
We have to have two laptops to play. Brian is not here right now, so
this
okay.
fucking place
I barely, oh, yeah. I barely know what I'm
we're
doing.
We're just navigating
here.
Straight. Even with Brian here, the fucking thing you.
Yeah. No, okay, but anyways, so what we're talking about this review we're talking about is actually just being released as we speak right now. It's 10th Planet Kush, episode 19, featuring Joe Rogan. That's the one. It's up like right this second, probably, and Joey fucking goes off, and I.
Joey
I gotta put like a warning thing before this. The views of Joey Karate do not reflect the views of Eddie Bravo, right?
I didn't go off. I
gotta put that up.
I didn't go off. I love. Let me tell you something.
You'll see what we mean.
It was funny because I read something that Dana had mentioned that what's his name choked, and I started thinking about
Kenny
it.
Kenny Florian.
And I started thinking about it, and I said, you know what? How can I say that about a guy that I've never tried what he's doing? Like, this is to the point in my life where I'm at. Like, I can never say somebody choked. You know, maybe he had a bad day. And then I started thinking about it. He had, like, 6 bad days, you know. But I never said he choked or nothing like that. All I said was, I was fucking, all I said was he was as skinny as Jesus.
Well, people will see exactly what you said when they watch the episode.
Well, yeah.
But it was, you know what, it's all funny.
So what it is for the people who don't know what we're talking about, Joey does this breakdown of the UFCs as Joey Karate, who's a Cuban black belt. And it's probably, even if you're not a UFC fan, it's probably the funniest fucking thing you watch on the internet.
It's the funniest possible, most entertaining reviews of UFC previews and reviews. Sometimes we review
yes,
a show,
sometimes
but there is nothing out there. Fuck ESPN. Fuck all that HDNet shit. There's nobody that brings the fire like Joey. All that shit's entertaining to a point, but I don't know how many times I fucking turned it off halfway through MMA Live and half. It's just it's when you hear Joey do it, fuck you.
Well,
fucking want it to last 30 minutes.
And I'm always 2-3 or 3-3. My picks are money. You understand me? Because I've learned from these guys, and I know what it is to get beat up. So I watch these fights, and that's how I pick the things. And I've been like 2 out of 3 lately with the 2 key matchups always being money. So I'm not that fucking bad.
No, you're very good. You're very accurate with it. I don't want to see that many guys talking about fights, analyzing fights. You know, I don't like, there's not a lot of guys I like to listen to.
Dude,
I
want to
hear funny. You know?
Yeah, you know what? I respect everybody out there doing
to
you know,
me personally, I don't get nearly as much insight from the from like any articles or any commentators. I get it from MMA forums. I think dudes
yes.
have more opinions and
yes.
better points of view on MMA forums.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
Everyone's interacting. There's some very good writers.
Excellent.
Guys who write on the underground.
Excellent.
There's guys who write on the underground that you read their shit and you're like, this guy's a fucking author. I mean, he might as well be writing for a magazine. This is like really well written, a really well written breakdown of the event, of a guy's performance. That's to me, just because a guy has a job with Yahoo doesn't make him more credible than, you know, McFuckstick 1 on the underground. They're just human beings.
They're just writing their emotions.
Exactly.
It
doesn't need to be official on ESPN.com to me. I'm interacting with people on the underground and getting someone's opinion. You get a bit more insight as to how a fight's going to go down from that than I think than any of the websites online.
You know, the one time I do like hearing what a fighter actually has to say about a fight, the one time when they're talking about stuff that the public, and me included, really don't know about, what's really going on in that fucking cage.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Very few people experience fighting in front of the fucking world.
Right.
So when a guy's breaking down a fight and they see something, a chink in that guy's armor, like he folds, or, you know, like maybe fighters can, after a while, some fighters are known as folders, right? They just fold under the pressure.
Right.
You know, and fighters see that quicker than the average person. So I like that kind of insight.
Yeah, there was a time when I was doing commentary with Randy, and a dude got poked in the eye, and the referee went over to him, and he said, "Can you see?" And he's like, "Man, I don't know. I don't know if I can see." And Randy got angry. Randy goes, "You never tell him you can't see." He goes, "If he tells him he can't see, it means he doesn't want to fight." And I was like, whoa, he got like really intense. Yeah. Like his crazy, like, you know, a competitive drive came out when he was discussing this other guy. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's
I love what I that
hear.
Shit. Yeah.
But I don't want to hear like a bunch of analysts sitting around going, what he has to do is Clay Guida's got to keep the fight standing. Shut up. Shut up. Yeah. Stop it. Stop it. I want to hear you.
I want to hear
the cocksuckers. I'm going, mama man, the caveman, Geico, Guida, takedown, ground and pound. It's all happening, dog. You ain't stopping it. That's what I want to hear that kind of stuff.
I do enjoy Inside MMA, though. I watch that shit all the time because they bring in some cool fighters.
Yeah, I'm a Boss Rutten fan to the death.
Yeah, me too.
He's
Boss
fucking
to the death.
Hysterical in the craziest way. You know what I mean? Boss is insane.
We were
they let an insane man host the fucking show. It's hilarious.
We flew to Boston on the same plane. We were in the same flight.
He's right nice as fuck. One of the nicest guys I've ever met.
So
Boz is super crazy nice, but he's also crazy.
Yeah, he is. So we're on the plane, right? So Boss is on the plane, and he goes up to use the restroom, and one of the ladies that's working for the plane is like, "Are you here for the wrestling thing? Are you?" You know, and he's like, "Yes, mixed martial arts. We're there for mixed martial arts." You know, he's talking to him, and she tells him that her husband has hands that he, or her boyfriend has hands that he had registered as a deadly weapon, and Boss became obsessed with this. Boss is like, "This is not true. You know, I told her bullshit." You know, Boss is like telling me that he told her bullshit. We got off the plane. He was still down. She's telling me her boyfriend's hands are registered as a deadly weapon. I'm like, no fucking way. He was like super amped up about this.
Oh, yeah.
It was hilarious.
I mean, just listen to some of the shit he said on Pride.
Oh, he's awesome.
Oh, my God. He's got like at least 15 to 20 classic lines. Yeah. Like, you want to put that shit on a loop.
And on top of that,
crazy shit.
Badass fighter. I mean, he was one of the premier strikers in MMA during his era. Like when he took out Tsuyoshi Kosaka, watch that fucking fight. Watch that fight where he won the title. He's a bad motherfucker. That wasn't actually won the title. That was the first fight he had in the UFC. On the posters, it said, "The world's greatest martial artist." That's how they were bringing him in, as the world's greatest martial artist. And Boss just fucked up Tsuyoshi Kosaka, just blasting him. Like, there wasn't very many dudes who were striking like that in the UFC back.
Yeah, and Kosaka's fucking tough as hell.
Tough as fuck, dude. Yeah. Tough as fuck. Boss was a savage, man. His attack, man, he could kick so fucking hard. I remember when he first fought in Pancrase, all these dudes were kind of doing the same kind of thing. Pancrase, they had open hand slaps. You weren't allowed to punch. And there's a lot of dudes that weren't kicking very good. They just were kind of like, they'd take a guy down and dive on leg locks because they all these shin pads and these shoes on. Like, you could grab a hold of a dude's feet pretty easy. And a lot of dudes were doing leg locks. Boss Rutten came out of nowhere, blasting dudes with kicks. Just boom! You would see them hit these guys, and they'd be like, "What the fuck is he doing?"
And the palm strikes, these Japanese guys they were just slapping each other and grappling. He said, "Wait a minute, we could slap? How about I fucking slap you really fucking hard?" So he came in and he was fucking iron-palming dudes.
Well, what he was doing was, Boss could pull his hand way back, so he was basically just punching you with this. He was using all his punch techniques, but he was hitting you with the meat of your hand, which really is better because it doesn't hurt your knuckles. Your hands don't break. You can hit some shit really hard like that.
He was knocking people out with these slaps. The Japs weren't
crushing
anybody
people.
Out.
But uppercut slaps, knocking dudes senseless.
You know what's crazy is I went to Amsterdam with Boz Rutten, dude.
Oh,
when
in
2001, I commentated for a show called Too Hot to Handle in Holland while I was working for King of the Cage and Pride. They fucking hired me, so we're on the same flight, and we're all on the same flight. He lived in L.A., and this is when he was crazy as fuck, dude. I'm not going to get into detail what happened. I don't want to bust him out, but He's known as a crazy wild man.
Yes.
On the fucking plane was a crazy wild man on the plane, and I can't get into details, but god damn it, when we get to Holland, we partied all fucking... I have about 100 pictures of me and Boz all fucked up in Holland. Jacked everywhere. Oh, I can't even begin to tell you.
Do you remember any of it?
I remember all of it. Well, I remember a lot of shit thanks to pictures, because we took a lot of pictures. But
and then you watch the pictures and you go,
isn't it weird how your memories become memories of the pictures? Well, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You actually remember that those are your memories, the picture.
Well, memories are only relevant, you know, if you use them. If it's a memory that's not never going to come up, it's really hard to retrieve. If it doesn't have any emotional, like, bearing in your life. Like, I have memories from my early childhood, because they were, like, strong moments that meant something to me. I learned something from that experience. But if, like, a regular memory, just hanging out with somebody, how long do you remember that for?
Good memories. I remember a lot of shit.
Dude, as I get older, I feel like I have less room on my hard drive. I feel like I got an old hard drive.
Well, it's
filled up with shit.
I don't remember the dumb stuff, but I do remember the important stuff.
I got a question for you, Joe. What do you think, out of everything you've heard and about pancreas, I mean, what do you think? I don't know what to think, but Ken Shamrock told me, came out of his mouth that all those pancreas fights were worked. They were set up. Except
he said all of them?
Except for when foreigners fought each other. They would just let them fight.
Wow, that's interesting.
But when it was Japanese against a foreigner, like he said, he actually worked for the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
He was in pancreas as their American to fight so they can mix it in with the Europeans. That's what he said. He said,
right.
I was brought in. You had to be really
other
good.
Guys have said the same thing.
Yeah,
other
yeah, because he said he was. You had to be really, really good because you had to, you know, if you had to. If they asked you to take them to like the later rounds or whatever, take them late into the fight, you had to be good enough too, because sometimes the foreigners didn't know they were fixed. He said the foreigners didn't always know, but we would control it. Like we were.
So the foreigners, you'd have to make sure you just didn't knock them out. You'd have to
something,
fight with them.
They were trying to create characters and do different shit.
What would they do if the foreigner got hurt?
Dude, this is just all, I don't know if this is true or not.
So what
I don't
is
know.
It all about? Gambling? Is that what it is?
I don't know. But
fixed fights? I mean, if it's all about predicting the outcome, is it like pro wrestling with fighting?
What
is
it? Fight
I think it was, half pro wrestling, half real. You know what I mean? I think that's a pancreas. But I don't know, man. This is what Ken Shamrock told me. I don't know.
I wouldn't know.
Because I do know one thing, that fucking Frank Shamrock against Alan Golas, that shit was real. That was pancreas.
Was it?
And that was real as fuck. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that fight at all.
Damn!
Was it good?
Alan Golas was all over Frank Shamrock.
Really?
But you could, if you grab the rope, you got to let go of the hold and start again.
How
so if you're in
that?
A fucking hold, if you can grab the rope. So
weird
Alan Golas, Alan Golas was all over Frank Shamrock. Frank Shamrock just started grad. He was so green. He really didn't know jiu-jitsu that well.
Right.
He was just a real natural athlete, powerful, strong. He was always explosive. He was just a fitness fucking powerhouse. And he knew some shit from Ken Shamrock. But he wasn't that good at that point. And Alan Golas was all over him. And if it wasn't for the ropes, he would have fucking... But at the end, Frank Shamrock got him in a fucking footlock, dude. And Alan Golas couldn't reach the rope. And he fucking jacked him and broke his ankle.
Really?
Yeah, but it was like a draw, I think. I don't remember exactly if it was a disqualification. I don't know. There was something at the end. I don't know who won. But I do know Alan Golas was all over him. But he got saved. Frank Shamrock kept saving the ropes, and then at the end, he got him in an ankle lock, man. And Alan Golas didn't defend right, and he broke it. I mean,
I was surprised.
He screams. Alan Golas screams.
I was surprised that Frank Shamrock retired. What I was surprised.
He's not really
the commentator for the Strikeforce.
But he's not. He hasn't retired.
He said he retired. He had a big
oh, dude, he retired
ceremony.
Before. Dude, money,
dude, he had a big ceremony. Stood in the middle of the octagon and vowed to everybody.
You know how many times Ozzy retired? You know how many times?
Ozzy who?
Ozzy Osbourne.
Stop! He never retired.
Exactly. You know how many farewell tours? Technically, he's had several farewell
Ken
tours.
Ken Shamrock had a
farewell. Farewell.
Okay, so you think Frank Shamrock getting in that cage just bowing to everybody's just publicity stunt?
Yeah.
That eventually he's going to come back and make it like it's a really big deal that he's coming back?
I'm not going to say it was a publicity stunt because maybe he believes he's really retiring, but right. I believe, and he hasn't made that much money. He hasn't made that much money.
That's,
and you have all these boxers that have made gazillions in boxing. It happens all the time. All these boxers have made gazillions. You get used to the money. Damn, if I fight again, that could fight for, like, dude, I could make $200,000. Like, that means a lot to these guys. These guys aren't rich.
Right.
They'll come back. You know what I mean? They'll always come back.
How old is that Shamrock?
I think he's coming
back. He's in his late 30s. I believe he's about 37.
You know, he even guys with millions come back for the money.
Yeah.
And he didn't make millions.
Well, he's a smart guy, though. You know, he
but
can do
I respect
anything.
Him. I'm not saying this. I'm not saying
he's like, a, I think he could do anything. And I think if he decides that he doesn't want to compete anymore, why should he compete? If it's not in his heart anymore and he feels like his performances reflect that, why not just step down? Why not stop doing it if you can get over it? The real problem with fighters is at a certain point in time, your self-esteem and your self-worth evolves completely around your ability to fight and beat people up. And when you can't do it anymore, you feel like a loser. You know, a lot of guys, like, they don't even know who they are when they stop competing because it's such an intense experience that a giant chunk of their life is dedicated to getting really good at it, to getting good at fighting. Their whole life revolves around their fighting. And then when they're not fighting, it's like they're lost. Like, when I was doing comedy and I was sucking, one of the best things that happened to me is I tore my ACL. And the reason being is I couldn't train, I couldn't do anything, and I certainly couldn't fight, and I needed an operation. But it took competing as an option away from me. I was 21 years old, and it took it away. Now I was like, I can't compete anymore. My leg's fucked. Okay, so now I do have to concentrate on the next phase of my life. Because otherwise, the thing about martial arts is this is the only thing I'd ever done that I was good at. So I would do other things that suck at them, and I'm like, but I'm good at this. What the fuck am I doing? Why am I getting away from this? My brain would be like, you don't want to do something and be terrible at it. Do something to be good at it, even if there's no fucking money in it, no future in it. You know, you can get really, really, really attached to the idea of who you are and being a fighter. It's very difficult for those guys to step away. You know, you can call it the glory. Everybody says it's the glory. It's far more complicated than that. It's who they are. It's all of a sudden their life is not wrapped around training camps and preparing and improving your skills to face the next level and to get to the top and, you know, you get your title back once you've lost it and, you know, it's not that anymore. Now it's just, you're just a regular dude. Well, if you were just a regular dude, there's nothing sad about being a regular dude. But I guess if you're a fighter and you go to become just being a regular dude, for a lot of them it's just too much to handle. They don't want them in a normal life. They're wired for fucking craziness. You know, they're wired for that extreme experience. That shit's hard to walk away from, huh?
Dude, nothing could feel better than beating someone's, like, winning the belt in the UFC main card.
When Chuck Liddell throws those arms back. And,
yeah. I mean, what feels better than that?
Yeah. I mean, it looks like...
You're the number one guy on the planet.
When
know?
Chuck would do that and throw his arms back, it looks like he's got, like, the whole fucking... Like, he should be glowing.
Yeah, like there's like a lightning bolt
coming from the universe.
Skies. Yeah, you, of course you get addicted to that. When, like, fuck yeah!
Remember when he
you need that? That's the ultimate rush.
Tito, when he smashed Tito, and you know, and after it was over, he was so fired up because Tito had talked so much shit. Yeah. Chuck is like the nicest guy in the world, but if you talk shit, Chuck Liddell is the last person you want to talk shit to because he just wants to take it out on you. He wanted to take it out on Tito so bad. And when he knocked him out and he fucking threw his arms back, like, rah! You could, it literally was like, it was like that. It was like a black hole was opening up.
Dude, were you there when, did I tell you the story about Chuck Liddell partying and some Dana's lawyer or something grabbing some chick's ass? Did I tell you that story and all that shit?
Should you be telling us?
I don't know the guy's name, so it doesn't matter. It was just a guy. So,
well, did he do something that can get him in trouble?
No. Chuck, okay. No. There's a
you said grab some.
No. Chuck loves the story. No. Chuck loves the story.
To jail.
No. What happened is we're at some club in Vegas, XS or some shit, and it's like Dana, Lorenzo, Chuck's there. Like they're mad. This guy that I'm talking about, it's the lawyer guy. One of the they have a bunch of lawyers. A lawyer for something.
Right.
Little guy. He's all sitting there. We're all at a table, and right next to us, the next table is this straight baller. Like he had to be a rapper, or like because he was a straight making it rain, throwing. It was funny. He was.
Oh wait a minute, dude! I was there. This is the guy that got mouthy with Chuck.
Yes. Remember, he started throwing ones up.
Yes.
And it was funny. He was the dude next to us was throwing up ones. The ones were landing on our table. We had billionaires there. Nobody's picking up the fucking ones, dude. They're just all over our feet. The guy's making it rain and no one gets shit. So anyway,
the guy got loud and mouthy.
No. He had a bunch of girls in that. The rapper guy, it was just him by himself with a bunch of chicks at his table. And we're right next to him. And I'm sitting there like looking at all the girls going, God damn, this guy has got a lot of girls. Like what does he do, right? And I think, I don't know what he was an athlete or something.
Probably sold coke.
And the lawyer that was sitting next to me, we're both looking over at all the chicks, and I'm going, God damn, he's got some hot ones. And the lawyer guy reaches over at their table and grabs a chick's ass.
Oh,
and the girl
God.
Turns around and goes, who the fuck did that? And the lawyer pointed at me. He said, me. I go, fuck
whoa,
you.
Wait a minute. Give up this guy's name.
I don't know his name. I don't have no idea who he is, but he was with everybody, and he's just like, wow. He grabbed the girl's ass, and then the girl goes, who grabbed my ass? He goes, he pointed at me, I go, dude, it was him, fuck you, I didn't grab no girl's ass.
He fucking pointed
at you? He pointed at me, right?
We have to find who this guy is.
So that girl grabs the fucking athlete dude,
right?
Comes over, and he gets right in his fucking face, and he's right there saying, did you, and the guy keeps trying to shake it. The lawyer guy tries to shake his hand, goes like, fuck you, shake your hand. You grab her fucking ass, I'll fuck you up right here. He's like running in his face. He goes, let me shake your hand. Let's talk. This goes, fuck your hand, man. He goes, let's just talk. This goes, I'm going to fuck you up right here. And then while this is happening, fucking Patrick calls Chuck, or Dana calls Chuck, or Lorenzo, one of them. They call Chuck. Chuck's just hanging out on the other side of the table. He looks over, they go, Chuck, handle that shit. Chuck went fucking... Dude, he went right into that guy's face. He said, what the fuck you gonna do? He didn't even know what the fuck happened. And the guy starts going, trying to shake Chuck's hand. He was trying to shake Chuck's hand. Chuck goes, fuck you. You fuck with anybody here, I'm gonna fucking kill you.
Wait a minute. You sure that's what he said? Because weren't right there, though. I was there
he
with
was
you.
He was screaming at him.
Really?
Yeah, and the guy was trying to shake Chuck's hand, and Chuck was like, I'll
Chuck it seemed to me a little bit more less intense than that.
No, that's
but
exactly
the guy
what,
was wait, definitely wait. Very aggro, but Chuck did get in his face.
Oh, dude, Chuck got right in his
Chuck
face
saw.
And shut him down.
What
is
he
that?
Saw
his
Chuck? Hands were fucking registered with the FBI. What happened? Because only black guys and their cousins. You ever notice that shit?
No, there's a lot of white karate guys
when
that
I was a
registered
kid. Nah, they don't exist. When I was a kid growing up, if you were black and you were talking about Bruce Lee, it was always that black guy that said, listen, I got a cousin who's a black belt who's got his hands registered with the FBI.
Yeah.
What does it entail to actually have your hand registered? Only black guys have their hands registered.
Exactly. Maybe 20 years ago, I think if you had a black belt in karate in some states, you had to register your hands.
I don't think that's ever been the case.
But you never heard about that? I've heard about that.
People heard about it, but it's not real. It's just things that people make up. I don't think there's any place that makes you register your hands as a deadly weapon.
Are you sure? You're positive.
Almost positive.
100%? We
not,
got
not
this 100. On tape.
I'm not 100, but 90? I'd say I'm 90. Yeah,
if you're,
I'd say I'm 90.
If you're a professional boxer,
I think somewhere.
Boss Rutan was very sure. This is not true. No, he does not. That boss is very upset.
Or a professional fighter, and something ever goes down, you always lose because that's the case.
Well, that's not necessarily the case. That's Roger Huerta thing. Everybody thinks he was in the right. That guy that knocked out that chicken.
But things have changed now. I think
things have changed now.
Like 20 years ago, there was something. There were some states that registered.
Well, that's a video. There's a video of that guy being an aggressive douchebag.
I've
so
never
that,
seen
that's
Roger
where
Huerta
the
thing.
Evidence is it's a good thing. It's karma.
Off in Texas and
yeah, well, the guy punched this chick in the face. Like, it's the beginning of the video, and the guy just, whoever's filming it looks like he just got lucky and caught this all on tape. But this big black dude, he's a fucking, like a quarter, what's going on here?
Nothing.
Just
nothing.
Hold it like a mic.
Nah, I'm not in the mood. I'm over here hanging, relaxing.
This big, big guy, he's like 250, fucking giant muscles, walks up to this chick and just blasts her in the face and sucker punches her. And everybody's like, what the fuck? But the dude's so big, nobody wants to do anything. Well, Roger Huerta gets right up to the guy and he goes, hey, man. And he's got his hands up like this, man, you just knocked out a girl. And the guy's like, I'll knock out any bitch I want. I'll knock your bitch ass out. And the guy took his shirt off. So Roger Huerta goes, all right, I guess we're going. Roger Huerta takes his shirt off, and there's a lot of scrambling in the camera. It's tough to see what's going on. But seconds later, maybe four, maybe five, the dude's unconscious on the ground, and Roger Huerta's beating down on him. Just blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's like karma, like a movie. It's like he's an action hero. He's like Spider-Man. He just blasts this dude out of nowhere, and they all got it on video. And you can't say anything because the guy hit a chick. It's like the perfect scenario. It's like, here's a guy using his martial arts for good, unquestionably. I mean, he's in a place where a guy assaults a woman and does it, hits her with a sucker punch. He confronts the man with his hands up in a passive way like this. Like, hey, man, what the fuck? You just knocked out a girl. Like, surely there's got to be a reason for this. You know, yeah, that girl killed my mother. You know what I'm saying? You know, you never know. He's like, I'll knock out any bitch ass I want. I'll knock your bitch ass out, too. And Roger Huerta kicks his ass, and it's all on video.
I love it. Roger Huerta, Captain Save-A-Ho. I fucking love it. Give him a cape right now. It's over.
I don't think he meant to do it. I think he couldn't help himself. You know, that guy went through a lot of abuse when he was a kid. He's very sensitive to bullies, I think. And when he sees a situation like that, it's like you have to step in and do something. Like, that girl just got punched. I mean, even if it was for a reason, I mean, what could it have been? I mean, what's the reason to walk up to a chick and sucker punch her? She drown your puppy? What the fuck? You know, what is it? There's no reason.
Why would I sucker punch a chick? Let me think. She would have had to...
she'd have the keys to the nuclear bomb. She's right.
You know what? If she stole my fucking phone, I would fucking... If she stole my phone, I would sucker punch her.
Really?
Yeah.
That's all it takes? A girl has to steal your phone and you'll sucker punch her.
Oh, fucking...
Wow. Your phone, you're very close with your phone. He loves his phone.
No, maybe my laptop. My laptop. Maybe not my phone. I would like push her head.
What's the longest time you've been without a phone and without internet connection? What's the longest time?
Ooh. Man, AT&T is worldwide, man. You know what I'm saying? They suck locally. AT&T sucks balls at my house. Right. I can't talk on the phone at my house. It's kind of weird. But God damn it, it'll come on in Thailand on a fucking island off the coast of Thailand. I'm like, God damn, it's working. I guess the roaming or something, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but...
I went to a resort once in Mexico, in Cancun. I wanted to go see the Mayan ruins. We went to Chichen Itza, and the resort that we went to, we stayed at near Cancun, no telephones, no internet access, no television.
Beautiful.
Nothing. Beautiful. There was nothing. It was terrible. I fucking hated it.
Oh, shit.
I got movies to watch on my laptop. I'm watching movies on my laptop. My laptop can't even connect to the fucking internet.
And you're running out of movies.
How long did you go? Nighttime, man. I like watching a little TV. It doesn't matter where I'm staying, how beautiful it is. When I lie down in bed, I like to see what the fuck's going on in the world.
Oh, dude.
I like to just turn on CNN for a few minutes.
Last week, I made a mistake. I wanted a house phone. So I called AT&T. Terry called up AT&T, and we got everything put together, the DSL, the house phone. Well, they hooked everything up, except they shut the DSL off for 5 days. Just shut it off.
No DSL.
No DSL in the fucking house.
Oh, my God.
That dial-up.
No internet. Dial-up. Yeah. Oh, my God.
So after one day, I was like, fuck it. And I just sweat it out. I didn't bust down and go to the library. And I'll tell you what. By the third day, it was kind of fucking nice.
Really?
It's kind of fucked.
I'd be so behind on emails. I couldn't do it.
So what?
I'd get stressed.
So what? 5 days. Try it for 5 days. No computer, no cell phone. See what your life... You know, when Brock Lesnar does that shit sometimes, you really got to think about it.
Yeah.
You really got... And I know you're in a position where you need your cell phone. Okay.
Yeah, but listen, man. This is, obviously, I agree with you. That's why I moved to the mountains.
It's something about it. I really enjoyed it.
I think being separate, just having a little time to yourself is very important.
Very important.
Look, I mean, I'm a huge proponent of the isolation tank, and that's the whole theory behind the isolation tank, being alone. Completely.
Dude, in 98, remember I was going out psycho?
Mm-hmm. Eddie's girlfriends always have the best name. Born Again was one. Psycho is another.
Psycho, we were at the tail end of the relationship. It was falling apart, and we decided, let's try to rekindle our love and drive up the coast to Monterey. Let's try it. One, see what happens. One final fucking go at it, right? So we drove up, and it was pretty fucking cool. Getting high, driving up the fucking PCH. The view was amazing. I didn't realize, first time ever I drove up, I didn't realize how beautiful the coast is.
Incredible.
The view is incredible. All the way up the coast, it's like, beautiful. I kept pulling over every 10 minutes. Though? I kept looking. I'm like, I'm like, I got to videotape this. This is like fucking heaven.
It's weird, like, that it's so close to the edge, though, that road. That road's scary as fuck.
Yep.
It's like you could easily just turn, just decide, this is it, I'm going to end it, turn to the right, and you're off the side of the cliff.
Oh,
scary.
Oh, fuck yeah. It's scary, beautiful.
And you're trusting the other person coming the other direction. Yeah. I'm trusting you to not be crazy and suicidal.
So we're driving up the coast. We go up to Monterey. It's fucking cool. We go to the aquarium, videotape and shit. I'm like, fuck, man, well, I'm having a good time right there. This is nice. Right, smoking weed the whole time. And then we spend a couple days in Monterey. It was cool. It was getting a little boring, but I'm like, okay, we were going to drive back down, and there's a place, it's like the wilderness next to the beach on cliffs. It's called Big Sur, and you rent little bungalows, and we're going to rent bungalows for 2 nights. Like, fuck yeah, and go hiking, and then hike to the beach. Fuck, it's amazing. It's fucking paradise. We get there, we check in for two nights, bam, we immediately go hiking and shit. We had been in Monterey for a couple days. We go to the beach. Fuck, I got that all. It's like some magical shit. And then, man, the sun was coming down, and we go back to the bungalow, and we didn't know they didn't have anything. They didn't have radio, TV, nothing. They had nothing.
Straight up pussy.
So we were like, oh shit. So it's like 7:30, and we're kicking back. There's nothing to do. So we watch the last 2 days at Monterey on the little LCD screen on our my camcorder. We're watching that, and I'm thinking, there's only 90 minutes of this. I was beginning to see. We fucked, you know. First time ever, we videotaped it. It was like, whoa, the first time we've ever videotaped sex. Whoa, we ran out of shit to do. Damn, and now it's like 9:30 and shit. Holy fuck. I realized something, that how important TV and internet is, especially when you're, you know, I could just go to sleep or whatever, but when you're trying to entertain your girlfriend, I said, fuck it. I went to the front desk and I said, I didn't know that there was no reception up here at all. Can I get a refund for tomorrow? I just wanted to leave that next morning, get the fuck back to LA.
It's amazing.
So I came back and I go, guess what? She said, what? I go, I got the refund for tomorrow night. She goes, yes. She wanted the fuck out too. It was like, yeah, let's get the fuck out of here. We're just lying there. There's nothing to do. We've heard each other's stories for the last 6 months. Like, what are you going to tell me? A new story about
That's
you?
That's the problem.
Something new about you?
Man, when you first meet someone, hanging out with them for 10 hours in a row and just talking is easy.
We broke up. Yeah. I knew on the way back, she was in a bad mood. Like, we started fighting. I'm like, it's fucking over. By the time I hit fucking Santa Barbara, I was like, okay. I was just thinking of the exit plan. You know what I mean? It was done.
So TV kept your relationship together.
Yes, and I realized we didn't have shit. We didn't have shit. By the time I hit Santa Barbara and Ventura, I was like planning like for the future,
you know,
without
had
her.
You had fucking, and sometimes that's enough to keep a relationship together for a
and
long
time. And we had entertainment.
Time.
We watched a lot of TV together. Yeah, yeah. If we didn't have TV, what the fuck would we do together? You know
interact.
What I mean? Nowadays, couples, like I went to my friend's house, Steve from, Steve Mele from Mele Fight Year. Him and his girlfriend, they got the big screen going, and they're both got their laptops out. They're both. Every time I go over, they're watching some movie. Oh, we're watching a movie again, and we're on our laptop too. And it's like, that's the fucking wave of the future right there, right?
Well, yeah, if you're in that kind of a relationship, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? We're hanging out, but we got shit to do, but we're still hanging out. We're still right here. I could kiss you and all that, but I got work to do.
Some chicks, right? Though, they want to be watching the same thing. They're like, don't want you in the room while they watch a movie and you.
But you gotta cuddle. How you gotta watch? If you ain't cuddling, why are you watching the movie?
Well, fuck the cuddling.
Why you
want to watch
experience
the movie? You sit over there. I sit over here. Like, you know what?
Don't
talk
about
Julia Roberts.
Delightfulness film. I don't like people on top of me. I don't give a fuck who it is.
You don't cuddle.
But I check my body.
I love cuddling.
Oh, I like cuddling too.
I don't mind at night, late night. Like not at 8 when I'm watching like fucking UFC.
I'm ready to get my nookie cookie. Then I'm good.
Nobody.
Yeah, you're right. You can't. You can't cuddle and watch the UFC,
no,
right?
You can't cuddle and watch the
no
UFC.
No way.
What, man, I don't like that. I like to wean myself off of shit, especially the last 5 or 6 years.
Right.
Like, there's nights I don't sleep with I have sleep apnea machine. I know I'm going to get a headache. What if there's a fucking earthquake? What if? I always want to prepare myself. And that's why I don't like this shit. These are fucking luxuries, guy. That's why I was the last guy to get a fucking cell phone. You know it. You broke my balls for 3 years about it. Something about it. You know
that pager.
When I call somebody and they have a cell phone, they don't answer. It pisses me off because it's not a house phone. It's a cell phone. It's in your pocket, you miserable motherfucker. Answer the fucking thing. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I don't like cell phones, because I like to get people. I call them and then I say, let me look at your cell phone and smash it, because that's what it's a luxury. Answer the fucking thing. It's the same thing with these fucking computers. You got to get off, especially you. You're intelligent. Get off this shit for 5 days and see how different your fucking life is. I enjoyed it. After the second day, I was like, God damn. It's like I was on coke. I had to go somewhere every 20 minutes to do a bump. That's what I feel like when I'm on a computer.
Yeah,
every time I'm home, I gotta stop what I'm doing every 30 minutes and see who emailed me or whatever.
Yeah.
It was really nice not to give a fuck. Like, you know what? I don't give a fuck.
It would be nice. I agree with you.
I
understand.
Nice.
But I actually enjoy the business when I get in the mode and I gotta I gotta answer all my emails.
I'm loving it.
It's happening, son. Pop, 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 pop.
But you know what? I write a letter from time to time. I hand write a letter just to fucking keep me alive, dog. Don't depend on this shit. You know what? Let me ask you something. If right now, if I took your fucking phone and I asked you what your mother's number was, you wouldn't fucking know it.
No,
and neither
no,
would
no,
you.
No,
and
no.
neither would I. We're getting too fucking comfortable, guys. And it's fucking
that
bullshit.
That is true.
I take your phone, I smash it. You're going to sit there scratching your nuts for 2 days. You know three numbers in your head. The house, your manager, and that's it. You don't know nobody else's number.
Yeah.
Well, think of how fucking
I know
soft
Eddie's
we
number.
Are. We're fucking
you're
soft.
The only number I know. But I don't even know that number no more because
no,
you got a new one.
You
I don't know your number. Number.
I haven't logged
oh,
in.
Your last one.
I had to wait for
3 days
for you to call me. That's why I didn't call you in Boston last week. I had to wait 3 days.
How many numbers do you think you can store in your brain?
Me?
Yeah, anybody.
Bro, in the old days, because of my cocaine and my criminal shit, I don't want numbers written on papers. Telling you from my mom never wrote nothing on papers. When my mother died, that's why I never talked to my sister anymore. Because my mom had all those numbers in her head.
You know, Jay-Z does all his raps in his head.
In his head, you have
nothing
to.
Nothing on paper.
It's in your fucking head, man.
That's kind of crazy.
That's insanity.
I mean, you do need a paper from time to time. Don't
yeah.
believe
I like
you
notes.
Man.
I went
I'm
through
all
a
about
long
notes.
Time where I didn't write any of my comedy down.
Don't believe he don't use a paper. You got to write shit
yeah.
down from time to time.
I got
remember
notes like a motherfucker.
We all
that's
have
huge.
Notes.
I'll like forget. Them. You know, there's I forget, man.
What I think is
all
happening, Joey, is much more
too
complicated
much
than that. I think it's not that this is making us, you know, soft. I think this is becoming a part of us.
Right. No.
When
I
you
understand.
Leave your phone at home, and I leave my phone at home, and I go out, and I realize I don't have my phone on me, I feel.
Naked.
Like something's wrong. Yeah, I
you're
feel
disconnected
like,
from the world.
I feel vulnerable.
You have this anxiety.
Yeah, I feel vulnerable.
And then you walk in your door, you pick up your phone, and I called you. Big fucking deal. You missed
yeah,
the guy.
It makes me feels good though.
Something about it. Think about it. Think about when you walk in, you haven't had your phone all day, uh-huh. and you open it up, and you think all this fucking knowledge is going to be in there. And
I think it's nostalgia for the past. I think we're moving towards an era where you don't remember phone numbers. They're on this device that controls everything in your life, and it might even be a part of your body. I think you can't hold on to the past. Things are changing. They're obviously changing. In our lifetime, the internet has made things radically different, just in our lifetime. We have had more change in our lifetime than hundreds and hundreds of years in the past, just in a few decades. I think all this computer and technology and shit, it's not making us soft. It's becoming a part of us. And it's gonna I think, in some way, it's going to help human beings evolve.
Well, 2 years from now, when the Arabs bomb the fucking tower or the satellites and we got no phone and you're stuck on fucking Ventura trying to call me, cocksucker, you'll say, I hope fucking I had a fucking Joey's number
listen,
in my
you know, you're right. If you're right.
That's the least of my worries when the world ends.
No, I didn't talk about the world ends.
The phone ain't
going to
work.
Fuck, listen, they've been trying to hit...
you ain't going to have no line. When the world ends, there's no flying.
I don't want no fucking.
You're gonna need
lines.
To know how to make a bow and arrow with your shoelace.
I understand.
And go kill a rabbit.
That's why I'm getting ready for that shit. That's why
I got bows and arrows.
That's why I hang out with the brothers in Vermont and shoot.
That's
and
why we're gonna go hunting with Ricky Schroeder. We're gonna make it a reality special. Eddie Bravo, me, and Ricky Schroeder out hunting.
The only animal I've ever killed was, if you count a
you'd
rat,
be down
like
for
I
that.
Set up a mouse trap,
and you
kill you know
a
what
rat.
I mean?
Yeah.
That's the only thing
I'd you'd be down for that, though, right? Go hunting with Ricky Schroeder?
Fuck yeah.
We should film that, right?
Come on. I need to get a rifle.
That would be interesting. You and I, super baked in the woods with guns. What a great idea.
Can't do that. You can't be super baked
with a straight Ricky Schroeder.
Right? If I was really high, I think I would be better at hand. I'm just kidding, ladies and gentlemen. I wouldn't be high with a gun in the same woods as other people.
Yeah, how dare you?
Yes, you would. That's okay.
I would not do that.
Next thing you know, Eddie can't do the rubber guns. He's got a 22 in his fucking knee. You know what I'm saying? What happened?
You have to be very careful. I read this article online about – I was researching hunting accidents in Maine because I used to have this joke about hunting in Maine, and I was like, I wonder what the real numbers were. Like, how many people actually got shot? Well, the real problem is experienced hunters. They literally see deer. They'll see a deer, and they'll pull the trigger, and then after they pull the trigger, they realize it's a woman in a red jacket. It's like their mind plays tricks on them because a seasoned hunter has to get so good at recognizing movement. There he is. I got the opening. Boom, pull the trigger. So their brain literally puts an image of a deer in front of them when they see motion. Your brain tries to already give you the image before it even gets it.
Because you're looking for it so bad.
You're looking for it so bad that your brain makes you visualize a deer. There's the deer. And these guys literally say they saw a deer and the most horrible nightmare.
How often does that happen?
All the time.
Really?
That's a problem. The problem is experienced hunters. Experienced hunters who just, they're just used to knowing that you have to capitalize on a quick opening. There's the opening. Bang! Oh my God, it's a person! Like, that shit's real, man.
Wow.
That's the scariest thing about hunting.
So
scariest
thing about
hunting is hunters that don't know what the fuck they're doing, and you know, people accidentally shooting people. It happens all the time.
So you got experienced hunters out there, 30%, and the other is unexperienced. So some motherfucker is gonna get shot. Is what we're saying.
Dude, the article that I was reading was about this guy who was an investigator, and he was out there like investigating people who were shot. And you know, they had this one guy that he think was a suspect, and the guy was an experienced hunter, and he just, you know, was asking the guy like, hey, you know, you see anything? Anything going on? You know, we got a situation. And the guy's like, no, didn't see anything. All he did was just drive by the dude's house every day for a week. Just pause in front of the house, stop, look at him, drive. 4 or 5 days later, the dude cracked. He just couldn't take it anymore. Imagine the guilt of accidentally shooting somebody while you're hunting. You know, you think you're seeing a deer. So he talked to the guy, and that's what the guy said. Once he finally confessed, he said, I really thought it was a person. I mean, I really thought it was an animal. I saw an animal. I saw the horns. I saw the whole thing. I saw a buck with a big rack, and I pulled the trigger. And it was a person.
Let's go do that. And tape it.
I don't want to hunt till they let us hunt people that are cocksuckers. That's when I want to go hunting. I want to hunt the fucking human.
Yeah, but
in
you
the
can't
woods.
Eat them, man.
I don't want to eat a fucking. I don't even want to eat something.
But you eat animals like crazy.
Yeah, but I don't want to eat something I shot. Though.
Oh, I do.
I don't see it.
Why?
Don't see
why not? Why
I don't
would you want
see
some...
that fucking hole in its head?
Why would you want the animal to die in some fucking factory farm where they get their brain smashed by a piston and you know they're living in cow shit all day for most of their life until that happens?
I just don't want to shoot an animal.
You know what? I don't want to either, but I eat meat and I love it. I had a juicy fat fucking steak last night. It was delicious.
I had a juicy one for fucking
breakfast.
I
love meat, man.
You know what?
I love it. I think it's a part of being a human being. I think
I love pussy, but you don't see me shooting.
But
no
I don't
bitches.
Think it has to. Have to.
I love pussy, but you don't see me shooting a bitch in the head.
I like your logic, cocksucker. It's hard to argue with it.
Even though I would love it, I just don't want to shoot an animal.
I know you don't.
God
want
bless
to.
You, motherfuckers, are going and stuff.
I know
like
you
that.
Don't want to. I know you don't want to, and I respect that. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. There's
I love
nothing,
you guys. I don't want you shooting Eddie and vice
just,
versa.
I don't think that because you eat meat, I don't buy the argument that you should have to shoot an animal. I don't buy that. I think you know we've allowed ourselves to somehow or another. To be removed from the process of murdering, slaughtering, and butchering the animal, and we just enjoy the meat, which is kind of crazy if you really think about it.
Fucking crazy.
So I just want to, for my own personal edification, I just want to go and experience it.
I want you to go. Like. Why can't we get a cow and shoot it fucking in your backyard?
Well, you know, you could. You know, my gardener got in trouble for killing a goat in his backyard.
What they do to him?
They got mad at him. They were going to evict him from the house, and he's like, I don't get it. He's like, he goes, I could cook, right, in my backyard. He goes, why can't I kill a goat? He was like, this way you know it's not diseased, it's safe, it's like the safest thing. To him, it was like so normal.
Yeah.
It's like, what? It is normal. I mean, why can't he kill it? How come he can cook it? How come he can? He could be outside with a side of beef sawing off chunks. Nobody would say a word. They would say, wow, that's a big piece of beef you got there. But if you actually killed the cow and started sawing the beef, he would get in big trouble. And I understand it's because you got to get rid of
it
the
just, it's gross, dude. That's
it is
one of his neighbor ratted him out?
Yeah, someone ratted him out.
He's a Spanish person.
Yeah, he's Mexican.
Spanish descent. Yeah, sure, yeah. We don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I
kill pigs.
Like, he's, I mean, the way he was talking about it, it's like, wow, this is silly. Like, come on. This is the, I want to make sure my meat is good, you know?
Bro,
I know the animal's not diseased.
When I was a kid in Miami, my uncle would get the pigs, bring them up, feed them for a couple of weeks,
yeah.
And then fucking kill them while we were there. Horrible.
I stopped eating pork for a while because I saw that movie, My Brother's Keeper. Did you ever see that?
No, I heard about it.
It's a documentary about these guys that were kind of slow, and one of them, I think, got accused of murder or something like that. But anyway, in the documentary, they live on a farm, I believe in upstate New York. I forget. And the guy went to kill one of the pigs, and he pulls out the shotgun, and the pig starts running. That pig knows what the fuck is going down. Pigs are smart. They're, like, smarter than dogs. So when this pig sees that shotgun, he just starts fucking running and squealing and scrambling. The guy's chasing after him, finally gets the gun to his head and blows his brains out. But, like, while before it happens, that pig is in utter sheer terror. And I thought about that. I'm like, man, I don't think I want to experience that. Like, why am I eating pigs?
When was the last time I ate bacon?
I eat it all the time. I gave up. It didn't last very long.
Listen,
but for a while, I was like, cows are dumb. Fuck them. They're stupid. But really, the shit that you're supposed to eat, I think, is the smart shit. I think you're supposed to eat fish. Not smart, but difficult to catch. Fish and game, you know, those are hard to catch. Like, cows and pigs that are just sitting there laying around, that's probably not the best for you.
I appreciate your argument, and I know when I eat a piece of meat that some cow's hanging upside down with a fucking thing in his neck. I don't see it. I don't want to think about it. But by me going hunting, which I really couldn't do anyway, it would just make my life. You know what I'm saying? I don't even like venison. I don't like none of that shit. I eat veal scallopini if this certain fucking Italian makes it to me in the East Coast.
I can't eat veal.
Thin like a motherfucker. I eat it and I make believe I don't even know what the fuck I'm eating. You know what I'm saying? Mm. It's like eating pussy when you're all coked up and drunk. I can't. And that's it, guys. I eat meat because of my necessities and stuff. Fish, you know. Chicken I eat. And even though I know they're nasty and they piss all over the fucking legs, I still fucking eat chicken. I won't go to Popeye's chicken, but I eat chicken.
Popeye's is delicious.
No, yeah, I know.
Spicy chicken with the rice and beans.
Yeah, next time you get a breast from fucking Popeye's, take the skin off it and see the foot. You can see the indentations of the toe. They cut the foot in half and see what the fuck's in there. You'll never eat Popeye's again. You understand me? I got the surprise in my life.
These opinions are purely those of Joey Diaz.
These opinions are true. I know all about mafia meat and all that shit.
The Joe Rogan Experience podcast. This is all Joey's opinions. I, for one, am a huge fan of the Popeye's chicken. I wish to avoid litigation.
All right. What about you, Tarzan? You like Popeye's chicken?
I like El Pollo Loco's new chicken jalapeno sandwich. I'm addicted to that motherfucker.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I'm telling you, man. El Pollo Loco jalapeno chicken sandwich they just came out with. The bread is... They did something to the bread that Mexicans in the back. They soaked that shit in something. It's like a McGriddle chicken sandwich. It's so good.
Talking to Mexicans, I got to give Mexicans props this week because I have encountered something I've never encountered in my life. I moved into North Hollywood, the coolest neighborhood I've lived in California, and we actually have a Mexican ice cream man. You don't know what life is till you have a Mexican ice cream man. There's no schedule. Some days he shows up at 10, some days at 6, some days he got ice cream. Last week he showed up at 11:15 while I was watching the UFC on a Saturday night. Terry's like, do you hear the fuck? And I wish I was joking with you guys. This motherfucker comes at 11 o'clock, bing, bing. You go out there, the best soft serve ice cream I've ever had out here. Better than Dairy Queen, all that shit. Tremendous. He had shoes on there last week. He was selling shoes. He's got popcorn. I'm not fucking with you.
That's hilarious.
As long as you keep moving, I guess he's got a mobile store. He doesn't have to pay for space or anything.
And the ice cream soft serve, he dips it like the thing, like Dairy Queen.
You just hear a bell? Bing. Old school? Is it like a, is it a truck with a motor?
Bing. A fucking huge truck, like Mr. Softy in the East Coast.
Okay. Oh, and so it's an ice cream man. Okay.
No music, no nothing. Like, I've seen the ice cream man downtown that just goes, hello, hello, patagate. And he just talks in Spanish, and everybody flocks out.
Most of them push like a cart.
Yeah, I see those guys.
Your dude's in a truck.
This motherfucker has a truck that has a bell. Bing.
When you hear that, your people just come out.
They lose their mind. The ice cream is fucking delicious.
What a great idea the ice cream truck is. That's one of the greatest ideas ever.
And if you go nickel bags like
it's not that huge. It's not that huge, though. It's not. You only see them in poor neighborhoods, right? Well, you don't see them in nice neighborhoods.
It's hard to trust those motherfuckers. Yeah, some hard dude just selling you some shit on the street out of his truck.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Hey, I grew up on Mr. Softy. That shit was delicious.
How weird is that? You can't just... What are the laws? They got ice cream truck laws?
No, yeah, you have to have a license. You can't just do that. You have to have some sort of a merchant's license.
And you got to have a kitchen.
Something.
You
it must be really hard because we would like see more service. Ice cream trucks in rich neighborhoods, but we really don't.
Or do people want to buy it, man? Rich neighborhoods? You know, you can't be going through Beverly Hills in an ice cream truck.
No, you got
to
get clear. Because people think
you're probably trying to rob them.
You know what? You know what it is? You know, the main thing is they know in the rich neighborhoods the kids just can't come out.
Yeah.
They can't get to them. In the poor neighborhoods, the kids are out in the fucking streets at 3 and 4. They're like, the kids are like fucking stray dogs in poor neighborhoods, right?
Dude, when I was living with my grandfather in Newark, they would be playing stickball in the middle of the street. You would have to stop. And whatever they'd be playing. They'd be playing soccer in the middle of the street. They'd be playing, there's mostly Puerto Ricans and Dominicans and stuff in Newark. And you would literally have to stop your car, wait in order to get through to where you wanted to go.
Like, they'd be playing
in the street. Car's coming. Stop. Everybody would stop their game for a second.
We did that all the time.
The car would drive by and they'd restart the game.
Every goddamn day playing football on the street.
In the street with cars.
That was the story of my life. Bunch of poor fucking Mexican kids. No one had a dad. 90% of all the kids, we were like fucking the little rascals, dude, on my fucking block. It was a couple guys. I was like 10 and 11. Once my stepdad left at 10, I was gone. I was on the streets. My mom couldn't control me and my brother. Stepdad could. But once I was 10, we were on the fucking streets. And it was like three dudes at 10, my brother at 14 and 15, and then we had some 18, 19-year-olds and some 20. And we're all mixed in playing football, organizing shit. We're always on the street playing basketball games, bunch of Mexicans, and we're all into rock. Eric was into Rush. No one had a dad. Everyone's dad was gone except for Honorio. But fuck, man. What was the plan?
I did it with Irish.
Oh, ice cream truck. Oh, ice cream truck. Oh, that was part of our life. Playing football on the fucking street. and ice cream truck coming by. That was
I
it
came
every
from
day.
An Irish Italian neighborhood, and we played fucking everything on the street, from stickball to football. And then when their leaves came down, that's when you played two hand touch. And then we put the bricks, we put the bricks in the middle of the street, and you pile the leaves on top of it. And some dickhead's driving with his car.
Oh my god!
Hit the fucking, we were fucking animals there.
When I lived in Jamaica Plain, when we first moved to Boston, we moved to a bad neighborhood. We moved to this place, Jamaica Plain, and it was one of those streets where you would on the street there was like, you know, maybe 15, 20 kids that would live on the street. And they would be hanging out in the middle of the street all
day.
Night. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and you'd be like watching TV. They'd be like 10 feet in front of your window, screaming at each other, yelling, drinking beer, throwing shit.
Oh shit!
Summer nights, dude. Nobody went to bed.
Why go home?
When there was a blizzard, everybody was out in the street, fucking riding, taking sled rides down the hill.
Yeah. It was crazy. My mom couldn't control us. We were gone. We had a thing called bombing, where everyone would get together late at night. We'd get in camo. Climb lemon trees, fill backpacks with lemons, and then we'd climb in other trees, and we'd be all camouflaged in a tree, and when the cars would come by, fucking throw lemons at them, and then they would stop, dude would come out, and we'd be hiding in the fucking trees, man, and they would never find us. We were all camouflaged. We love camouflage. But we would practice jumping fences and escape routes. We knew everybody's backyard and everyone's fence. We would practice. So if we got chased too. Cops would even come by. Cops chase us, but they couldn't catch us. We're gone in the backyard through the fences. We were going through the...
You know, I had this conversation with Brian Callen yesterday. I'm going to have it again with you guys too, because we're all the same, and the three of us, that we were kind of like left to our own devices. You know, do you think that that's... I think every interesting person that I know, almost all of them were not raised by the parents. They were all like raised like wild dogs. They all like figured out their way through the world. Like they may have a good relationship with their mother, you know, but they don't really see her that often. She didn't really teach them things. They kind of figured things out on their own.
I for sure did, man. Me and my brother on the streets. My mom just had to work all the time. She worked all the goddamn time.
If you had like a really cool dad who was like a Christian, who was like, you know, like real like Republican but super nice guy, you could have thought like that. If your dad raised you like that and brought you along like that,
who knows?
You could have.
Who knows? I don't know.
Do you think that
it would have been different? My life
would have
been different.
Your brain gets programmed, right? Your brain gets programmed by the people that are around you, especially you know, your influences and your teachers and your father. Of course, is going to be the biggest teacher in your life. If your father was a really nice guy and a sweet guy and a fun guy and a loving father and a Christian. And like, you know, really gung-ho, rah-rah Republican, you know, the United States would never do a bad thing to us. You could be sucked into that way of thinking. Don't you think?
No.
You don't think so? You don't think so because you're you, and you grew up wild. You grew up, your parents died young, you were really on your own in a lot of ways. I mean, you were taken in by people's generosity, like your friends and
yeah,
families.
But I had a mom till 14, and it's weird because...
But that's, see what, see
no,
what I'm saying?
My
that's
mom
young. 14
you
is very young.
Thing. My mom was pro-American, dog.
Right.
Here she was, had a bookmaking bank, was involved in heroin and shit.
Right, but I'm saying it's very difficult to look at the world like this is how you developed. It's very difficult to step back and say, okay, how much of who I am is my environment?
I'll tell you what. When I was a kid, I didn't buy into the Boy Scouts. I didn't buy into none of that shit. I never bought into clubs. I never bought into none of that shit.
Well, you grew up very streetwise.
But still.
You've got some stories about your stepfather.
Right. Right. But up to the age of 10, I wanted to be a white kid, an American kid. I came here from another country. I grew up on Dick Van Dyke.
So did you feel like insecure?
I wanted to. Fucking. Till this day, I'm insecure about it.
Really? About being Cuban?
No, I'm not about being Cuban, but my big thing was to be an American. My mother came here
funny?
For me to be an American.
Everybody wants to be everybody else. Is white kids who want to be black? Black kids
no,
want
no,
to
no,
be
no.
white?
No. When I came to this country, my mom stressed it. We came here for you to be an American.
Right.
One time on a bus, some kids were talking in Spanish, and they wanted to beat the teacher up because the guy threw him off the fucking bus and made him walk home.
Right.
And I walked in the house, and I told my mom. My mom's like, I don't know what you're upset about. This is America. You came here to do this. My mom raised me to be an American, and I seen... some of the shit I bought into.
I'm hearing a song in the background right now. Well, I'm proud to be
and some of the shit I didn't buy into. It's just the way it happens. I never bought into a lot of that shit. I'm allowed to vote now. I haven't had a felony in 15 years.
You can vote now?
I can vote now, but I don't want to vote.
That's what happens? It's a 15-year break off?
10 years. But I don't want to vote because what were my choices last year? Palin, the old guy, and Obama. All three of them were bad choices.
Okay.
They weren't intelligent. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So part of me is in, the other part of me isn't.
Okay, what was, t- What happened with the? Didn't you have someone hostage? Can you talk
about
that?
Yeah, yeah. In 1987, I was 27 years old, whatever. I was working in Boulder. I was going to school at night, and I was snorting coke with three hands. You know? And I got involved with some kid, and he was going to rob his roommate, and ended up robbing them both of them. And then the guy that I had as a partner was going to rob me. What a tangled web we weave when we tangle to deceive. And it just so happens that the guy got caught. Like I told him the guy I didn't want nothing to do with it, even though I had the coke with me. I sent the coke to Aspen, but the other guy, the guy that tried to rob me, he ended up getting pulled over with the guy we kidnapped in the trunk of his car, all fucking bundled up and shit. So I got arrested for the kidnapping too and everything, but you know what? I fucked up. It wasn't because I fucked up. It wasn't because America. Listen, bro, at 10 to 7, I got a ticket this morning for $200.
10 to 7?
10 to 7 this morning. For what? Both of you motherfuckers were sleeping. I was going to Tai Chi at 7, so I had to drive there. So my wife said, if you have to go to Tai Chi at 7, you might as well drop me off at the train station. I usually walk her every morning to the train station. But I drove her. There was a lunch truck there. I couldn't pull over, so I pulled by where she crosses the street. When I made the right, when I made the left, there was a cop on me. He goes, bro, the bus driver's complaining. He goes, it's a $1,000 ticket. I have to give you a $200 ticket for parking instead. Is that okay? And I took the ticket. I was not angry at him. I went to Tai Chi. I did my thing. I didn't mention it. He did his job. This is America. He did his fucking job. You follow what I'm saying to you? A lot of people got pissed off at this guy for pulling me over. He did his fucking job. You know, when I kidnapped that guy, I kidnapped him. I did that. I got 4 years. I got off fucking easy. They should have thrown me in there for 10 fucking years. But people don't really
see
it.
How much time did you actually do?
18 months, 16 months.
That's a long time.
But it cost me 2 years of my life. You don't know what your life, how precious.
Was it horrible?
No, it wasn't horrible. I could do it standing on my head. But the only people that
that's gangster talk. I could do that time standing on my head.
Listen, when you do time, bro, and you do time, guys like you don't, it's just another day in paradise. They're going to take us to a place where we get the bullshit about jiu-jitsu instead of 2 hours a day, 8 hours a day. You follow me and you eat and whatever. Your freedom gets lost, which sucks. But it's the people at home. It's not you or whatever. I could do whatever the fuck. Bro, my genes are from Cuba, motherfucker.
Tell me about.
I smoked the weed Castro smoked before he went to the mountains to take over. You understand me?
Now, what was a typical day in prison like for you? Like at that 6 months. You're in there 6 months. What's a typical day?
Living like a doctor.
You liked it.
Bro, you got to remember, I went to prison for 4 years. I got sentenced. But guess what I became? I became a stand-up comic. I learned how to do stand-up comedy
in prison.
On Thursday nights, they used to have movie night.
I didn't even know that.
Dog, they used to have movie night on Thursday night. So the projector would always fuck up, like Ustream. It would always fuck up.
Joey, talking to the microphone.
It would always fuck up. So on Thursdays, the people just jokingly, I would always go, what the fuck is wrong with the projector? And everybody would say, Cuba, get up there and talk. So I would go up there on Thursday nights. It was, you know, 200 people, and like 100 of them were black. So they go, Cuba, go up there and talk. And I would make fun of the black guys.
Like, what would you say?
You know, we'd make fun of the kitchen. You know, like the fucking kitchen.
This is the beginnings of your stand-up career.
This is the beginning of my stand-up.
What'd you say?
You know, we used to make fun of I used to be
That's how the movies
Bro, starts. I fucking, the first day in prison, they made me a baker. You know, you don't tell people what you want. It's like Cuba. Like, yeah, on the outside, I was a mechanic. Really? Well, in here, you're a baker. You know what I'm saying? Here's a book. Learn how to make bagels. And I made these cinnamon rolls, dog, that almost blew up the kitchen, right? These motherfuckers were big. So that afternoon, they fired me as a baker. And they made me a fucking dishwasher and a stockroom clerk, right? So I was a dishwasher and a stockroom clerk. And whenever they had shitty meals, the guys I knew, when they were going through the line, I would yell, don't do it. So I would go, don't do it.
How often were the meals bad?
3 times a week. But it didn't matter because at lunchtime, I was allowed to go to the store for 15 minutes. I worked it out where I had to drive to take garbage out, so I would go to the store for 15 minutes. Not only that, I would call in my order at the Chinese restaurant so it would be ready by the time I got there. So I would go back to the prison with Chinese food and groceries. That's how strong I was in there. Plus, dog, I didn't fuck around in there. Dog. Plus, they were doing steroids and selling drugs.
In prison?
Please, like a motherfucker. So I was in the stockroom clerk, so they had to pay me rent. So because they never inspected the stockroom.
So you stocked the roids.
I would
roids.
Say to you, yeah, I'll hold your roids, but you got to give me
$3.
You know what I'm saying? $3. It's all about dollars.
You got to give me some cigarettes.
So I had roids, cigarettes. I had pills in there. They weren't mine. They just belonged to other people, but you put them under pallets. So I would give them a key whenever they needed to go take shit out.
So you were the connection.
I was the holder. Plus,
how did they get the steroids in? Somebody had to put it up their ass?
Yeah, whatever. I don't know. They got a bag. I don't know. I never asked.
you imagine shooting a steroid into your body?
Wait, so someone, how do they smuggle it in again?
Up their ass.
Then they put it where?
They're contact visits.
Right.
What you do is you take your fucking kid and you fill his pockets with the yum-yums, and while you're making out with your husband, you say, you want to see the kid? And you pass the kid to the husband, and he takes the drugs out, then he gives you back the ugly kid.
Man, that makes me so
That's how Henry Hill did it. That's how they do it. Same shit. It's no, you can, bro, there's more drugs on the inside than there was on the outside. And to boot, this was a minimum security camp. We had contact visits. When you have a contact visit, there's parties every night. You know what I'm saying? These motherfuckers, that's the first time I did it. No, I was like the second time I did heroin was in prison. And I couldn't do a needle. So the Mexicans took a Mexican thing of heroin, melted it. I had to put like a funnel in my nose made out of paper, and they dripped it in my nose. And I got up, I had like candle wick burning out of my nose. What the fuck is this? And they're like, that's heroin, man. Be cool. I was like this for like a day. And then the white dudes, the bikers, would give me speed. And they would play basketball all fucking night on speed, the bikers. They'd be out there for Hell's Angels, bound each other. And I'd be out there with them huffing and puffing. Every week was a new adventure. I did every drug. But the drug of every...
This is crazy. Oh, this you is had crazy. A great time in college.
I was out there fucking...
That's a movie. That's the movie. Minimum security prison where everyone's partying and it's just the greatest time ever. And it's like a bum, like when you get released, it's like terrible. I wanted to go. It's like you die.
No, then I went to the funeral, which was even better.
You gotta talk in the mic. People keep complaining about
it. I was when I go to the halfway house, it was even better because I started loaning money out to the invicts. As a loan shark.
The invicts?
Yeah, because they want to go out. But if your rent's not paid on Thursday, you're not allowed for the weekend. So the rent would be $65. So I give them $65 for $92. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to give you $65, but you got to give me $92 tomorrow. And I had 10 guys on that row. Bro, I was a fucking machine in there. The biggest scam I had was there was an old Italian dude from Brooklyn. He was like a half a mobster, and he had pool cards. And he could only do one card a week. He would make like $30. And I went up to him and I go, bro, you have a problem with these cards. I go, you're giving them to white guys. You're not getting the black population. You're not getting the fucking spics. And he goes, I don't know. They won't talk to me. I said, give me the fucking cards. We're going to go partners. He went from selling one card every Monday to doing 10 with me. Because I had the brothers. I had the youngs. I had the Puerto Ricans. I had the whites. I had everybody. And it was amazing. That's why I really learned that I could really fucking do this. So on Thursday nights, they would say, Cuba, fuck the movie. Just go up there and talk about the kitchen. And they would all the yams would yell, don't do it. It was hysterical. It was fucking hysterical. That's and hilarious. I would just talk about that. And then I had this one crazy black guy. This guy was Anton Spencer. His name was Spencer Antoine from New Orleans. And he was crazy. And he told me that he was in there for 8 years for involuntary manslaughter. And he was my mentor. That was my dog, Jack. He was fucking nuts. And he would tell me about, like, one day some guy nailed him $2. And he comes in the kitchen. He goes, did you see that guy? And I go, no, I think he's packing and leaving. This motherfucker went and got a knife. He got him at the gate. The guy was getting out of jail. He's like, motherfucker, you better give my $2. I was blown away. I'm like, this guy was old. And his parents and family had money. They had, like, the best attorney from, bro, this guy killed somebody with his hands. And he got 8 years. Wow. Beat a black guy in L.A., downtown L.A., because I was in the federal place. He beat him with his fucking hands and got 8 years. And he did four for involuntary manslaughter. He had like $50,000 attorneys. This guy, but he had a knife. He had a gold tooth in his mouth. He was one of those brothers and shit that his eyes would go crazy.
Why do you think the gold tooth thing really caught on in the black community?
Because it's fucking... It's like a pubic hair in your mouth. You know what I'm saying?
It's all about blinging. You know what I mean?
Bling, bling.
Yeah, because people look directly at your face. So you want to catch their attention. That's why you got the necklace. That's why you got the watch. But nothing beats the fucking tooth. Next, you know, that's why they bling the glasses out, too. And it's like...
Yeah, but that never caught on with the white community. That's where white people drew the line. Stop. They went, duh, 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 duh. We can't join you on this one. You know, white people can't join you on this one.
We'll Mayhem? What about Mayhem?
Mayhem wears it as a goof. He's a character. In real life, Mayhem ain't walking around with a grill on. He does it like part of it is like to be silly, to be Mayhem. You know, but it's not like he wants to be wearing an iced out grill like fucking Lil Wayne or something. You know?
I don't know. I think he really likes it.
Okay. If that is the case, if Mayhem does, that's one. Out of like, you know, how many wiggers are there out there?
Hey.
A big number. It's a giant number. And they're not out there.
I'll tell you what.
Paul Wall, right? He's a white guy. He's got a grill, right? But this is not, you know.
One thing about white guys that wish they were black, they are they have all one thing in common. They will deny that they would rather be black than white. They'll deny that shit no matter what.
Yeah, you can. No, I'm happy to be myself. You know what I'm saying? It's just a hip hop culture thing.
Yeah, it's just where I'm from.
It's a hip hop culture thing. You know, it's where I grew up. I grew up like this. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's all about the game. You know, it's all about the hip hop game.
Yeah. Like, meanwhile, they got an oversized NBA jersey.
Meanwhile, he's got red pubic hairs. You can't talk like that if you get red pubic hair, son. They try extra hard, you know? White guys who want to be black, they have to try extra hard.
You know, it's crazy, though, but continue with Eddie. What I was telling you was that I went in there every Thursday. I get on stage, and then one day, this is fucked up, Joe Rogan. This is why I really dig you. Because one day, the guy in the library was like a nerdy dude. The guy that ran the library, and I was friends with him. We did acid. He was very into Nostradamus, and, you know, he was intelligent, but he had some problem or something. He went to prison. And the funny thing was that one day he came up to me in the jail, and a notebook was a big thing. And I was getting ready to get out, and I never even thought about it. He came up to me, and then he goes, "Hey, bro, I got your notebook." And I go, "What's the notebook for?" He goes, "So when you get out, you can write some jokes." He goes, "Every week you write jokes. I never see the notebook." And I looked at him, and I go, "I don't even write." And this motherfucker went nuts. He goes, "You don't write, and you go up there every week and do that?" He goes, "When you get out of here, it was like an angel. It was like an angel. I never seen the guy again. I never heard from him again." He just goes, "What I watch you do, you really need to write and get it together.
Wow.
Because you have a gift. Just pursue this." And that guy never even talked to me. Like, he never used to talk to me at
just
all.
Just said it out of the blue.
Out of the blue. Came up to me one day and goes, "Hey, wait, got your notebook."
The black guy, right?
No, a white guy. A white nerdy guy. That was like a really nerdy guy that would always roll his own cigarette.
So some random guy came up random to him and told him, "You got talent. You should."
Yeah, like in the library.
Do you think that if you didn't go to prison, if you didn't have that experience of talking in front of those people, that you probably never would have done stand-up? Or was stand-up something that was in the back of your head anyway?
It was in the back of my head. The prison really woke the animal up. Because not
only about it before.
Because you had to be funny before prison, right? Anybody who heard
"The
Nigga's Crazy" by Richard Pryor, you had to think of, he pushed it so hard in that.
So, but before prison, you were always the life of the party and all that kind of shit.
Yeah, I thought I was always good at the deli. I was always
Telling stories.
Yeah, I was always good with that shit. And then the thing that really got me was when you go to prison, they do a diagnostic on you. And I like to get an attorney now to really, that's the only thing that irks me about my life. Like, a lot of times people say, "Oh, I slept with this guy." With me, is I always wanted to know what was on that paperwork. Because it was an intense psychological evaluation. It just wasn't a guy with a piece of paper saying, "What do you think when you see a star?" Like, they put shit in my head, and electrodes, and all this shit. It was 3 days of mental testing. Mm-hmm. And it was eating me alive, and I wanted to know. I kept asking the counselor, who was from Mississippi. He hated black people. He hated Spics. He told me to my face. My counselor told me. He goes, I hate all you bug fuckers, Spics and niggas. I mean, that's how he broke. That was my counselor.
Oh, my God.
And he said to me, he goes, I go, "Bro, his name is Mr. Blue." I go, "What are you going to fucking tell me what's on there?" And one day he's like, "You really want me to tell you what's on here, bug fucker?" That's what he would call me to my face, bug fucker. He goes, "I'll tell you what's on here, Mr. Bug fucker. It said that if you really wanted something and I had it, that you would take it from me." He goes, "Now you do what the fuck you want with that." And he threw me out of his office. And I felt like a thief for 3 days. That's what I read it at. But what he was trying to tell me was that anything I wanted in my life, that's what it said, that I could do. Anything you want, dog, you could do. Do it. That's what he was saying. That's what he was trying to beat around. And like
by calling you a bug fucker?
No, by saying what he said to me. And a week later, he came up to me and he goes, "Hey, did you understand where I was going with that?" He goes, "You're a smart guy. You're not one of these guys. This is an experience."
Tell us about your first stand-up gig. Do you remember it?
Yeah, I remember it.
What made you go up that night?
Do you consider the ones in prison your first stand-up gigs?
I'm talking about first official at a club, like your first time you went up.
I'm thinking that if you did it, how many times did you do it in prison? You really were doing like open mic night.
I was doing every Thursday for about 90 days.
If that's not a movie, so I don't know what
it is. So you've done a bunch of times. Material? Did you have material planned out? Did you have stuff that you repeated? No.
What was the first club?
That's the toughest fuck. Can you imagine repeating a joke in front of those youngs and shit and all those crazy woked out Mexicans? That's the first time I really knew about the whole heritage, and they would sneak in fucking green chili burritos. Tremendous.
Really?
Bro, I was in jail.
Who had the best tattoo artists? Was it the Mexicans?
Mexicans.
Mexicans always have wild ass fucking prison tattoos.
I was in jail with three generations of Mexicans at one time. I was in jail with the grandfather, the Ayelas, the father, and the son.
Whoa.
That's really...
That's
deep. Once you start seeing that thing, you're like, wow. Deep.
That needs to be in a movie right now.
I'm like, this is fucking crazy. And I always wanted to shoot somebody and be a criminal up to that point. I didn't, you know, I always thought about that my life deserved more than to spend it in here. That's what prison did for me, bro. It was, if people come up to me and go, how bad was prison? Prison is how bad you make it for me, for fucking me. It opened my eyes. I became a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
It just gave me that opportunity to see. By the way, did you see the show about that dude that robbed millions? What's that guy's name? 2 years ago? The guy that went away. The Ponzi schemes. If you get a chance, watch that on fucking MSNBC.
What is the show on?
MSNBC.
On Bernie Madoff?
Yes, where they took him and to prison. Show He's in him? North Carolina now. Yeah. He went right in there and teamed up with the fucking mob. He paid people. And he don't give a fuck, that guy, about people.
Well, you talked into, did people have to tell you that you were funny, that you should go on stage? Did people tell you that you should do that?
Yeah, tell us about the first time on stage. Or if you don't remember.
No, I mean, I remember
time,
everything.
I would consider the first time he was on stage the time
okay,
you
the first time outside of prison.
Right.
The first time I was in
because prison. Because my first time on stage was an open mic night, but before I went to the open mic night, it was locker room.
Yeah.
I understand that. I understand that. Your first night officially as a comedian is an interesting one. Let's hear yours. But I'm so curious about yours.
The truth of the matter is, now that you get down with it.
You don't remember.
About a month ago, I got a call from a friend of mine, and we were talking that I hadn't talked to. I hooked up with him on Facebook, and he said something to me. He goes, bro, I knew on that bus ride home that you were always going to be an entertainer. And I asked him, I go, what are you talking about? He goes, do you remember after freshman basketball, you would get on the bus and fucking go off every night? He goes, it got to the point where the bus drivers wouldn't pick you up anymore because we used to go on and do the theme from The Odd Couple.
Right.
And then I would go into a fucking 20-minute skit all the way until we got to the thing. And I even wrote a blog about it that after he told me that, like, I called a bunch of people from those days and I'd go, bro, what did we used to do on the bus? And they were like, you don't remember? We used to take over fucking buses, the number one bus from 90th Street to 38th Street. We ran it, and you were the fucking host, an MC. And I'm like, wow. And I started thinking, I'm like, that's right. So if I really go to that, that was freshman year basketball.
Wow.
Where I used to light the buses up every time. And they wouldn't fucking pick it. I remember that, like being out there for two different bus drivers, and they would pick you up because you guys are too fucking loud.
Wow. That's hilarious. But then in school, you know, no one ever considers that maybe this guy should be a stand-up comedian. They just go, we got to silence him. We got to stop this. We got to teach some discipline to you. The lack of discipline is really what makes someone a comic, though.
I wasn't a stand-up at all, like, in that sense, like, growing up. But I was always, every year, I was always, if depending on the teacher I had, because junior high, in high school, you have, like, seven teachers. I was always the dude to start shit, play pranks, and always. Unless the teacher was Mr. Enders, you never did shit. You just fucking, he was a bad motherfucker. He goes, you want to act up? You want to talk?
We talked about this before on the podcast.
Okay. Who's Mr. Enders?
Mr. Enders, 10th grade, I think geology. I don't remember.
There's no way to tell, you know, the funny thing about someone becoming a comic is there's no one who could have pulled you aside and said what you really need to do is become a comic. It's like you almost have to experience all this resistance to your personality, to regular life, then that forces you into being a comic. It's like if someone can't just come up to you and go, this is what you really need to do, you really need to be a comic. Like, you need to go through all the bullshit in life to experience that before someone comes along and tells you, you know? How old were you when you first got on stage? I was 21. It would have been better if I was 30. Because when I was 21, I didn't have shit to say. I have no opinions about anything.
Can a 15-year-old comedian, stand-up comedian, because there's a lot of guys.
Yeah, like, they can be funny.
Can they be funny?
They can be funny if that's what they. So my problem was when I was 21, my whole life from 15 to 21 was all just taekwondo tournaments and kickboxing. That's all I did. That was 24 hours a day. That was all I thought about. I didn't really consider the world. I didn't want to be a loser, and I wanted to be really good at taekwondo, and I wanted to win the nationals, and I wanted to compete in the Olympics. I had all these ideas. But I didn't know about fucking politics. I hadn't a clue as to what was going on in the world. I didn't even think about it for a second. All I thought about was this and getting laid. That's all I thought about. So when I started going into comedy, I literally had no opinions. I know how to kick somebody in the head, and I know I like pussy.
So all the jokes were pussy jokes.
My jokes were sex jokes for like the first year and a half. That's all I wrote. Because when I'm 21 years old, what the fuck kind of opinion did I have that was interesting on anything? If I told you anything about anything other than sex or kicking somebody in the head, you would already know what I was going to say way in advance. I didn't have enough life experience. My life experience was very limited.
I hear that a lot, that people are too young to sing. Maybe
well, when you're 30, if you're the kind of comedy you do, where you look at you, you stupid fuck. You know, you do that kind of comedy where you point some shit out. Well, you can't point some shit out at 21. You're not seeing
people's
it.
People's not going
to
listen to you.
Like, they're not going to listen to you unless you're some super genius. And even then, it's probably not going to be funny. You know?
I just, I wrestled with it for a while. I was a roofer after I got locked up.
I roofed for 1 week.
I roofed for fucking 2 or 3 years. I sold some cars. I went to school, and then so I was sick and tired of people telling me, try it. And I was getting breakfast one morning. I opened up a paper, and there was a be a stand-up comedian class for $33, and I took it.
I was not funny at all. I was not a funny person. I wasn't funny until I started doing Taekwondo, and we would fight and compete in tournaments, and everybody would be nervous. You'd be nervous even in the locker room when you're about to go work out because somebody might just get kicked in the face and knocked out. It happened all the time. Guys got knocked out in class all the time. They get kicked in the face, and you would get fucking terrified. And so I was always cracking jokes to break the tension. I was always the guy who was doing impressions of other people on the team. That was the first time I became funny because other than that, I didn't think I was funny. I loved comedy, though, man. God damn. I just thought the idea of it was so crazy. Now, first time I saw Richard Pryor live on the Sunset Strip, I couldn't fucking believe this guy was just talking. He's on stage just talking. It was one of the most profound moments of my young life. I was like 13, I think. I was in the audience, and I was just looking around, and people were falling out of their chairs laughing. And I was holding my stomach. Remember, my stomach was hurting because I was laughing so hard. And I was thinking, how crazy is it? This guy's just talking. He's just talking, and what he's saying is way funnier than any movie I've ever seen. I was thinking of Stripes at the time, because Stripes was this amazing movie. You know, Bill Murray, the funniest guy ever, and Chevy Chase, and they're together in this movie, and it's incredible. This was way funnier, and this is just a guy talking. He was just talking.
Delirious is what got me. When I was like, I think 13, 12 or 13 when that came out, and me and my brother watched it at his girlfriend's house who lived with her mom, and we were watching it with my brother's girlfriend. We were fucking dying because they're the only ones that had, like, I think it was a VCR or something. No one had VCRs. We were dying. Dude. Then the mom came home, and we stopped laughing. And she was standing right there. We just froze. We're like, oh, shit, we're going to get busted.
Delirious was destruction.
Yes. She stood there, heard fucking Eddie Murphy go off, and she didn't say shit. She didn't say hi or nothing. She was fucking, We didn't laugh at all. She went upstairs, bam, and then we're like, That was the funniest suppression shit ever. Ever.
Yeah, Delirious was at the time. He took it to a whole new level. Destruction.
It's terrible now, but.
Yeah, it's not good. Isn't it funny? When I was a kid, man, that was the best shit
ever. That was the greatest shit.
Comedy does not hold up, man. A lot of it does not hold up.
And most old stand-up comedians.
You ever want to listen to like some old Bob Hope shit?
Ugh.
It'll make you want to jump out a fucking window.
Lenny Bruce, too. Old Lenny Bruce. Some of that shit.
Are you kidding me?
But some of it is fucking hilarious.
He's still got some shit that was funny.
What's the timeless shit? The timeless shit is early Innocent. That's will always be
Lenny
funny.
Bruce has a few timeless moments. He's got this. Right. He goes, homosexuals, they want to make homosexuals illegal. So dig this. This is what they do. They take a guy who's gay and they put him in prison with a bunch of guys who want to have sex with him. I mean, come on, man. He knocked that shit out of the park in like 1950.
But you know what?
That's funny. That's funny. That would stand up now.
Funny. When you go, dig this, man.
Dig
this, man.
So catch this. But towards the end, he went crazy. Towards the end, he would just go on stage with his legal papers and read from his legal documents. He was out of his mind.
He was fucking nuts, bro.
He was riding that
another,
train, too.
What's another classic Lenny Bruce?
There's not that many. It's classic.
Is that it?
Yeah, he had one about... he goes, Catholics, man, I don't think they get it. You know, it's like, you know, Jesus comes back. You think he wants to see a cross? It's like a guy walking around with an electric chair on his neck.
So let me ask you something. Yeah. Lenny Bruce did that first?
Yes.
Before Hicks.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, that was Lenny Bruce's joke.
Wow.
That's pretty deep.
When I heard Bicentennial Nigga and is it something I said?
Richard Pryor, son.
And what was the best shit from that?
Bicentennial
remember?
Nigga?
So many good
give me a classic.
You'd have to look at it.
It's like a couple.
Best one from whatever is, hey, man, say, nigga, you with the cape. Why are you looking at people's window? What's your name, boy? Dracula? What kind of name is that for a nigga? Where you from, fool? Transylvania? I know where it is, nigga. You ain't the smartest motherfucker in the world, you know, but you is the ugliest. Oh, yes, you ugly motherfucker. And what's that dirt on the back of your neck? You a filthy little motherfucker, too. You better go home before the sun come up. I ain't lying. See your ass in the day. You liable to get arrested. You want to suck what? suck some nut, black niggas. You some kind of freak boy, an ugly freak. All that shit.
Damn, Joey Diaz just went off.
That was my heart. Bro. That was my heart, guys. I listened to that.
He had Mudbone in there.
Oh, Mudbone.
Chinese restaurant.
Mouse. Give me another. Yeah. Give me another soundbite.
Our gang.
That was beautiful, man. One more. Another soundbite.
Our gang. Oh. Mudbone goes to Hollywood. Chinese restaurant.
When he told, I knew Jesus. I met that nigga at the railroad depot. I told him, don't you go down there messing with them Jews without no money.
Fire was the genius.
Oh, that was crazy. But Bicentennial, when he goes to the baptism, and a face like a lion and a body like a serpent. I don't know about you, but I don't want to see no motherfucker that looks like that. You're fucking
Man, when I was a kid, when I was in high school, me and my girlfriend Bethany, we used to come home from high school, and I had a cassette player, and we listened to Richard Pryor cassettes, and just giggle because we knew we shouldn't be listening to this. Just giggle and laugh,
dude. There was this guy that I worked with at UPS. We worked next to each other on an assembly line where we're sorting boxes. There's a fucking conveyor belt with boxes and
when
we're sorting.
When did you do that? That's a nightmare.
Dude, that's a
4-hour shift.
Dude.
That's a nightmare. That's
from 2:30 to 7:30. That was my life.
Oh, my God.
My life was waking up at fucking 1:30.
Oh, that's
waking
a terrible
up at 1:30
job.
Was
but
my
you know
life.
What? If you would have kept that job today, they would have paid you out for $2 million.
Dude, that's a
my
fucking...
My buddy just got bought out.
Yeah?
My buddy did that. Can you imagine he had the same job since high school?
Oh, my God.
He would have to go on 11:15 and work till 3. In high school, as a senior and junior. But guess what? When UPS went public, they paid that motherfucker $3
million. $3 million?
When they went public, because he had 30 years of stocks. They were just giving away stocks. Like, just give this guy. He's a part-timer.
When I worked there, it was a nightmare, man.
That motherfucker got so much money, he stopped talking to his brother and everything.
Stop talking to his brother.
The brother called me. He's like, bro,
brother have business investment opportunities.
Yeah, why won't your brother talk
people about always have business investment opportunities.
No, there was this guy, this black guy that I worked next to. We fought a lot, man. We had box wars and shit. It's a long story, man. He was pissed off that his conveyor belt was busier than mine, and I was the new guy. He was fucking pissed. But anyways, he would always have a ghetto box, and he fucking played Andrew. It was a black guy named Phil Collins. A black guy named Phil Collins. He was always angry that he got the busy belt. Boxes were coming. He'll throw boxes at me and shit. And I'm like, God damn it. This sucks. I got to quit. But anyways, he would always play Andrew Dice Clay in a ghetto box. He knew Andrew Dice Clay at that point, it was like 1990. Andrew Dice Clay had a few CDs at that point. He knew everything. He would put a different one the day the laughter died. Oh, he was just going back and forth. And it was, that was my story about Andrew, comedy.
By the way, I got to tell Joe while we're on this subject because it's very interesting. I used to always tell you about UPS. People used to always tell me how they used to ship on UPS, and I'd take them aside and go, don't ship nothing on UPS. Because my buddies ran the Paramus one. And all the UPSs, they have a little gate where they have Rolexes and diamonds because they ship all the world's diamonds on UPS. A lot of people don't know that. And they have a gate. So when that bell goes off, that means the security gate opens. And they would have these conveyor belts. And these guys would have to sort shit out.
Yep.
Well, my gangster buddies would take shit and throw it under the conveyor belt. And it would get stuck and rip open.
I ripped shit off. Duh. I ripped off shit from the...
My buddy used to show up with Rolex Presidentials, bitches, and they were selling for $10,000 cash, selling three a week, making $8.50 an hour at UPS, selling three Presidentials.
Well, how did they not know there was so many getting stolen?
Because their insurance anyway.
This is a long time ago before surveillance cameras and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Easy. Cameras would rip open because the boxes would rip. They would just wouldn't take the box and throw it on the floor.
Now they have tracking numbers and shit. They know where it's stopped.
They would take the box and throw it in the conveyor belt so the belt would break it. The box open. And then they would say, the watch got damaged. It's in pieces. Go get it. The watch was in their fucking pocket with the warranty and everything. So a $20,000 watch that they would sell three a week, these kids. Each of them were yanking $90,000 a week out of there. Plus diamonds, plus anything else that came out of fucking UPS. Those cocksuckers. The good old days.
That was the worst job
ever. You don't move. You don't stop moving.
It was so bad that the position I had, I thought it was a promotion. Like, I thought it was moving up in UPS. And the way you get into UPS is hard because I was working as a temp at the United States Post Office. And that shit was only 6 months or a year, something like that. And it was coming to end. So I had to get another job. So I had people that worked at UPS. They go, dude, try UPS. It's going to be really hard to get in, though. They hire 3 out of 30 people that they come in. They bring 30 people and they hire 3. And I'm like, You go, dude, it's they're looking for warriors, dude. It's really hard.
It's really hard.
2:30 to 7:30, and they work you 4 hours like a fucking dog.
Oh, my God.
But they paid you $8 an hour, and minimum wage back then was $3.35, so it was like, I want that fucking money. You know, so I went in there and just bullshitted my way through it. I went to the fucking interview, and they go, why do you think you're good for this job? I love working in the middle at graveyard shift. I'm always up. I have so much energy. I just want to have so much energy at that time. I love hard work. I don't want to work retail and deal with people. I want to work in the back.
So basically really what you did was like what you would do to a chick. You would try to pretend that you're something you're not.
Yes, totally. Dude, when they called the three finalists, and it was one of them was me, and I'm like, fuck yeah. I came and I knew I just bullshitted my way through.
You guys had finalists?
And there was three of them. Yeah, dude.
That's incredible.
There was three out of 30 people. They fucking called our name. We fucking come in. And then they take us, they give us on a tour of UPS. This is a tremendous warehouse.
So did you say, I really think my career is here?
Yes.
Really
all that shit. All that shit.
I can see me retiring with UPS someday.
So at first, when you first come in, this is 1:30. You're unloading semis. Their first job is you get in the semi, though, two worst motherfuckers. There's all these semis and go, you're part of the semi crew. You're just putting fucking boxes on conveyor belts, and then the conveyor comes out, and then the first guy sorts it by zip code, and he has a bunch of belts behind him, and he's going for it. So I'm in the fucking truck going, fuck, working hard, going, I gotta get out of this fucking truck. I need to be in the sword. There's all the dust in here. This is for the fucking slaves. Fuck this shit. So finally, I bumped up. Now I'm a splitter, and they time your ass. They're like hiding in the conveyor belt. Time, how many packages can you sort
you
a minute?
A yeah,
you
minute.
Have to
yeah.
go, dude. You can't think. You're like, there's nine belts behind you, and you're like fucking going crazy. But I would know when they were watching. I would know. I was like, I'm like always looking around, always looking. I'm like, oh, this motherfucker gonna time me. I would miss sort everything. I would just go, psh, 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 psh. I was just miss sorting shit. They don't know who the fuck miss sorts shit. And after we would have our meeting, oh, it was a great day. You guys did great. Like the team leader, fucking Edgar Bravo, again, the record holder for today. The guy's on fire. He's doing great. I was the fucking dude. I was the man. And I really sucked. I wasn't that good, but I just can see them timing my ass. And when it was time for the big promotion, way up the conveyor belt, like the dude who sorts for the actual trucks that are going out.
Up the conveyor belt.
Yeah, they go. We go up. The promotion goes to Edgar Bravo for his fantastic work and his fantastic times. I'm like, oh shit!
I got a 50. How did they not? What a whack system! How they not know you were horse shitting them,
dude? It's whack.
That's hilarious.
They don't get missorted because there's conveyor belts that go for fucking like hundreds of yards, and they're going through all this shit. It's complex. By the time when down the road in the conveyor belt, they see a missort. Oh, that's a missort. Goes to the missort aisle, and it comes all the way back. They don't know who the fuck missorted it. They make mistakes all the time. You don't know what the fuck's going on. They're fucking idiots. Well, anyways, I thought I got a promotion, got a 50-cent raise, and I'm sitting there back to back like Mir. You're sorting for people behind you, and I'm sorting for people behind me. And it's me and Phil Collins, and we're going. I'm the reason the guy quit, I didn't know he couldn't handle working with Phil Collins, because Phil Collins is like just this mean fucking black guy that would fuck really cool before work started. Everyone told, well, what about the Jets? Oh my God, did you see fucking Boomer Esiason? He was on fire. Everybody was really fucking cool at 2 o'clock in the morning. Time. But once it starts, you start fucking getting pissed, and he would get pissed that I was getting help because I was new. I was fucking out. The guys were always helping me, the managers, but they weren't helping him. So fuck, man. That was the worst job ever. I ended up quitting. They were begging me to come back because to get a guy to get you, it takes like 2 months to fucking have that shit wired. It takes a long time. And until you get it wired, the fucking guy's got to help you. The manager's got to help you. They don't want you to quit. We just put in a fucking 9 months in with you. You better not quit. I would quit. They were begging me to come back. I'm like, I'm gone. My back hurts. I faked a back injury. I just, give me the fuck out of here.
Well, we're all happy you did that.
Yeah.
Because then we would have lost you, bro. You would have been UPS.
Been a UPS. Dude,
I would have been a
You would have been a blue belt by now. Position. You would have been a UPS, only a blue belt. You would have never gone to Abu Dhabi. Would have been fucked up.
Thank God for Phil Collins. See if you're out there, thank you, man.
Thank you. Phil Collins, how do you spell
that? I ran from that job.
P-H-I-L-C-O-O-C-O-L-L-E-N.
I don't remember, man.
Because there were two Phil Collins. There's a drummer, and there was a guitar player from...
Phil Collins. Def Leppard.
Def Leppard.
Phil Collins.
Who you think you're dealing with? Some fucking novice here? You know what I'm saying? What's up, dog? What's the song of the week? How about fucking...
You can't play songs on this.
All right, we fucking...
Can't play
I told you on the way up
here,
dog,
one laptop here for this one.
Listening to Lynyrd Skynyrd, who I never even seen coming out of the woodwork, but I heard, whatever.
Freebird.
Oh, my God. They ain't fucking around, Doug, were they?
Yeah, Lynyrd Skynyrd had some fucking
jams. Them and the Alden Brothers, those
Sweet Home Alabama to this day, you hear, dun, dun,
dun, dun, when he dun, says, dun, turn dun, it up, oh yeah. my fucking
Come on,
Lord.
Man. That's a that's
turn that motherfucker
all-time
up,
jam. That's an all-time jam.
Fuck the rent money.
Yeah.
So what you got going on this weekend?
I got nothing, man. I was going to go to Sal's, and I don't know what happened there.
Sal's Comedy Hall is temporarily closed down because he's got no liquor license.
You're not doing nothing this weekend?
Just chillaxing. I got to keep writing.
And then Austin, you guys are doing a gig in Austin.
Yeah, that's the 14th.
That's the 14th.
That's a Wednesday?
I got Brea next Wednesday.
It's a Tuesday. Because the UFC is on a Wednesday, yeah, Tuesday right. night. Joe Rogan, Joey Diaz, Ari too.
Ultimate Fighter.
No, Ari, just you and Joey?
Just me and Joey.
In Austin? Beautiful. I'll be there too.
I'm in Brea next Wednesday.
Laughing.
Doing my thing too.
Next Wednesday, Brian?
Yeah.
Oh, next Wednesday is your monthly show?
Yeah, I got a bunch of
who's
shit.
Doing that? Who's doing that with you? I'll do that with you.
Yeah, I got a couple people coming down. On. Let me know what's cracking.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'm not
That's
doing
really
shit
getting
next Wednesday.
Big. It's been a lot of fun lately.
Yeah, you've been selling that place out, right?
Yeah, man. We've been doing good fucking numbers. So
every month, Joey does. Where can they find out about the show?
The Brea Improv at improv.com, 714-482-0700.
Where can they, like, do you have a
call
schedule
for
when you're going to be there? Is it your joeydiaz.com?
If you go on the if you go on the Brea schedule, it has me on there.
Do you have your website updated?
No. I have the Beauty and the Beast website updated.
You got to update your website. Your website, I mean,
I know.
You're always doing something, you know?
You got
a lot of people that would like to know where you're going to perform.
They know.
But no, I know we need to get you a real website with
Twitter,
a real schedule. You hit him up on Twitter?
Sure, bro.
And if you don't know Joey's Twitter, it's on the Ustream page. You can see it there. But
Mad
Flavor. MadFlavor.
I don't know about that. Brian knows all about
this. Listen, I'm glad that you're finally at least connected to the internet and really into this. And you were writing a lot of blogs for a while.
I still write every Monday.
Do you? Where do you put them up?
MySpace.
Joey's on the internet a lot.
Still rocking MySpace.
Because that's where I started with that. It's too hard to transfer them over.
Right, right.
No, you copy and paste.
Well, here's the problem. I have three different batches of people. My Facebook has more family people on it that I grew up with.
Right.
I don't want, and they know, but they don't know. You know what I'm saying? My Twitter people, my people on here, you motherfuckers are the best. I can talk about eating ass. I can talk about stabbing Puerto Ricans. You guys are the best. MySpace, I go all out, but there's nobody left. It's like me and a couple people, but I write my blog on MySpace just because I started on there. And sometimes if I get a lot of hits real quick, I put it on Twitter or something.
It is kind of weird how MySpace
fell
apart. I've never seen anything like
it. Yeah, but
it was so popular and it just got crushed. I don't know about that.
We just keep moving on.
I think Facebook is a better product.
I don't even my MySpace. I don't even bother advertising for seminars at all.
You know, yeah, I don't advertise my shows anymore on MySpace.
I just keep it up for the music. People want to hear my music temporarily. My music's up on MySpace. That's it. But I don't fuck with the jiu-jitsu part of it.
Facebook's just so much smarter with their updates and shit. Like, you can go to your timeline and see all this different shit that's happening. It's kind of interesting. You know, Bob's in a relationship with Lisa. Oh, no shit, huh? Click this.
That's
click
crazy.
That. You just get all busybody and start fucking looking through it.
By the way, September 19th, I'm in Rochester at 10th Planet Rochester with Chris Herzog.
What's the
date? That's September 18th.
No,
September 18th is Rochester. That's a Saturday.
September 19th is the Viper Room on the Sunset Grill. The Sunset Strip.
Those dates wrong, man. For some reason, I believe
18th,
that the 18th is Saturday.
Yeah, the 18th is Rochester.
And the 19th is the Viper Room. So
yeah,
get your tickets
and the
now.
Twister Viper Room. If you want to get on the guest list, twisterbravo@sbcglobal.net. I'll put you on the guest list if you're in L.A. September 19th, Sunday, 9 p.m.,
Is your band.
Yes.
September 18th, bro. 18th is a Saturday night.
Yeah, so 18th is Rochester.
Okay,
19th.
So the Sunday is the Viper Room. Right?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. Sunday night Viper Room.
And the Monday is a holiday, so come on, bitch.
Is it really?
There's a grand opening of a UFC gym on the 18th. I'm going to Rosemead.
Oh, shit.
Columbus. Columbus is September. Columbus 20th is probably Columbus Day. And October 10th is something else, I guess.
Also, my new website's up. All the techniques are free on it. All the shit that I put up on my website is all free. It's stuff that I charged for before up until October 1st. So watch them all. 10thplanetjj.com. Click techniques, please. Thank you.
So your chick got fucking picked up for cocaine this weekend in Vegas, that dummy.
Which one?
Paris Hilton.
What happened?
Her homeboy. This is what I tell you. Don't smoke in the car, cocksucker.
Don't smoke in the car.
Smoke in the car. It's a running joke that Joey Diaz will just hop into a fucking car in the middle of a police parade. It doesn't mean shit. He'll just start lighting that joint. Where's the reefer, cocksucker? What are we doing there? We playing games? And he'll just start lighting joints. And I'm always thinking, we're going to get pulled over and we're going to get, you know, this is not good. You're not supposed to smoke weed in the car. So we should have a rule. You should never smoke weed in the car. Don't smoke weed while I'm driving.
I don't. It just smells it up too much.
This is the reason.
For like an hour, you're vulnerable, you know?
Well, not only that. It's just stupid.
She was smoking. The windows were open, and the fucking smoke got out, and there was a bike cop or something.
Yeah.
And right away.
She drove right by him, and he's smelling weed.
He smelled the weed.
So he pulls him over and finds coke in her car.
Well, this bitch asks to go to the bathroom, goes to the bathroom, forgets to... You know, when you get pulled over, the first thing you do is you take that illegal substance, put it in your fucking snatch. Especially if you're abroad. If you're a guy, put it in your ball sack.
Where did this happen?
Touch it. In Vegas.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
She in jail?
No.
No, she got let out, but at three quarters.
Nancy Grace was very upset. Who is she to be let out of jail? If it was you or I, we would be in there right now.
Three quarters of a G-bo, bro.
Speaking of Dr. Phil, I've read some stuff in the tabloids that he's having trouble with his wife. Is that all bullshit?
Sad.
Is that bullshit or is that real? What do you think?
Who gives a fuck? That guy's
a no. I don't give a fuck
Phil
about
it. Dr. worth like hundreds of millions of dollars, and I bet you bitches bomb on.
No, no, what I'm saying is I don't give a fuck what anybody does in their own life with their marriage. I don't wish any harm in their marriage. I hope everyone fucking is happy.
But
that motherfucker, Dr. Phil, that motherfucker, I'm going to enjoy watching his life fall apart.
Why?
He's a fucking idiot, man. I hate that guy.
Wow, strong words.
I hate that fucking guy. He's a fucking backstabber to the the male gender. Come on. That guy's the biggest fucking traitor.
He's hustling.
Whatever.
Every day I'm hustling.
It's going to be funny.
I'm hustling.
It's going to be funny to catch him busted with hookers and shit like that.
I know.
That's going to be fucking hilarious.
It's going to be interesting what does happen to him. He's going to have to be very careful about his image if he does get divorced. It could be total horse shit, and he could be getting along with his wife great. But if he gets divorced and he's out there wilding, he's out there dating, because this is going to be bitches that want to set him up, try to get on TMZ.
How about the Dr. Phil sketch that was on The Man Show? There was a two-parter. Remember that shit on The Man Show? It was a reality when a guy that was posing as Dr. Phil had a fake book signing and people showed up and thought it was him.
That's right. And he was saying all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah, like the girls were in line. They didn't even know it was him. It looks like him.
It did.
But it probably didn't fool everybody. But, man, it was a total punk, like he would say. Like when he was signing the book, what are you doing? I got some coke back in the hotel room. You down? And girls would be like, yeah, let's do this. Girls were down. He hid, and then he was making moves on this one chick, and from under the table, a girl came out like he had been getting a blowjob and just walked away. And he just kept talking to her. You want a party? Get your friends. Let's go. I got some coke. And they were fucking down, man. It was so funny, that sketch. There was so much material. It was the only comedy. It was the only Man Show sketch that had two parts. They did it again the next week. There was so much material, man.
Yeah.
It was too funny.
If Stanhope and I had a real show where we could have really done what we wanted to do, it could have been very interesting. There was two problems with doing that Man Show. One was that I was doing Fear Factor at the same time.
That was crazy days.
Way
too
much.
Crazy days, dude. In the middle of all that Man Show shit, I'm training for Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the Man Show, depressed out of my mind. It was the worst from day one. Inside, I wanted to kill myself. I'm like, this fucking is not what I thought it was going
to
be from
day
one.
Well, when it started out, what it was supposed to be we would be able to do whatever we wanted. The way they sold it to me was...
Explain the beginning, how they offered you the show while you were still on Fear Factor.
I was doing Fear Factor, and they were saying, we want you to take over the Man Show. And I was like, with who? You know, who? And they said, well, we have a short list of people. Is there anybody that you would want to do it with? And I'm like, there's only one guy, Doug Stanhope. I go, that's the only way it would work. I go, he's the only guy that's like that, that like fits right in there with me, like my sensibility. And so they said, well, you guys would be perfect. You could do it. I'm like, but it would be too restrictive. They're like, no, you don't understand. A lawsuit would be good for us. The guy actually said this to me. He said, if we got sued, okay, it would be great publicity. It would be great.
And
this
at that
is what
point,
we want to do. We want to do nudity, blur it out. If you want to swear, beep it out. Essentially, you could do anything that you would talk about.
And real quick, we already had like 10, 15 ideas for sketches even before that. So this was like a perfect thing. I remember you called me and go, dude, Comedy Central wants me to take over the Man Show. How fucking crazy is that? We were thinking.
Yeah. So anyway, what happened was, yeah, totally. It was very strange. And they came up to me and they basically just gave us a story about what they were going to be able to do for us. We're going to have some show. It's going to be completely wild. You can do whatever you want. Well, once we got in there, it was a completely different story. They had like really restricted ideas about what the subject matter should be. The guy who was the executive producer wind up like kind of hijacking the show and taking all the things on in his direction. And this is the guy that me and Doug hired.
It's yes.
Like he had his own.
You hired the head writer slash.
He hated you. You and him. You remember that, right?
Yeah.
You remember that?
The head writer. I remember you going out to dinner because there were before you signed, you were like, let me pick the head writer. And you said, can I hire my guys? I'm going to bring in my guy. What was your guy's name? The bald
Tom
guy?
Giannis.
No,
Tom
no, Giannis. No, the bald guy, the comedian.
Chris McGuire.
Yes. Yeah. You wanted to bring in Chris McGuire and Matty Kirsch and me. And they said, no, whatever you want to do, man. Whatever. It's going to, you have total power. You have total power, dude. And you're like, damn. And you called me and go, dude, they're giving me total fucking power. So you go, well, I want to be able to hire the head writer. You went out, met with some guys, and you met with Giannis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's not get too into this. I know what you're saying, but I don't want to throw Tom Giannis under the bus. I think he's a talented guy. He just did what he thought was the right show, and I wasn't there. Well, I wasn't there, and the network had real serious ideas about what they wanted, and, you know, they were the ones running the show and coming up with the money, and they had some real serious ideas about what they thought was funny. And one of them was they didn't want Joey on the show, and I wanted Joey to come out at the beginning of the show naked and introduce everybody. He would come out with a microphone, a handheld microphone, let's get this party started, and Joey's dancing and everything. It was probably one of the funniest things we ever did, and they fought to the point of tears. This fucking chick, who I like, very nice person, she's executive, she's telling me, why is that funny? I'm like, how could it not be funny? I go, you're going to get Joey Diaz, he's going to run out naked, you pixelate his balls, the crowd's going to go crazy, it's going to put him in the perfect mood. I just don't see how this is funny. Tears are coming down her eyes. I go, we'll do two intros. We'll do one without it, and we'll do one with it. We do one without it. You go out there, the fucking place goes ape shit. They are falling down laughing. It was hilarious. It was the best intro ever.
And I got that all on camcorder.
Yeah. And so then I go to her, and I'm like, you know, I raise my hands up. See? Told you. Like, you gotta, I know what I think is funny. I'm capable of reproducing what I think is funny. You might not think it's funny on paper. You might not think it's funny as I'm describing it to you, but I know it's funny to me. And if it's funny to me, it's going to be funny to other people. It just has to be
but
people
these
that think the way I think.
Executives that went to college for 4 years.
That's
why the reason Chappelle quit, because you got to deal with these
fucking
morons.
Well, it's also the reason why it turned out it was the reason why Adam Carolla and Jimmy Jimmy Kimmel stopped doing it. It's because they gave up ownership of the show so that they could have creative control. They gave up on it because they're tired of these idiots, and they gave up. They were like, look, you guys can have the fucking show. We just want to be responsible for what gets done.
Yeah, and they for sure didn't want to hire me. They said, no. Once you signed, they go, no, this Eddie Bravo has no TV experience. Why the fuck do we want him on the show? And they're like, no, we're not going to hire him. We'll hire Chris McGuire and pa-da-da, but no.
Well, the problem was they didn't understand what I was trying to do. I was like, look, he says funny shit. He comes up with some funny ideas. He might not be like a writer in as far as like he's not going to come up with a properly formatted sketch, you know, without everything. I mean, he could eventually do that, but for right now, what he's good at looking at things funny, smoking pot, coming up with crazy ideas. And you could, you know, that's a.
They weren't having it. They weren't hearing it. You had to yell at them.
It was. He wanted it to be his show, and I wasn't there enough. I was doing Fear Factor at least 3 days a week. So for 3 days, they would be running the show, and Doug did not feel confident enough to take over. And he would send me messages. He would call me up and go, "Dude, this is fucking hell here. This is just driving me crazy. This fuck." And stupid sketches getting in, and I can't get this done. And and then the Janet Jackson nipple thing happened, and then we were fucked. Because then shit that we already had approved, they yanked out. They pulled shit out of episodes. Because after that Janet Jackson nipple fiasco, people who don't know, who weren't in show business, to a lot of people, it was nothing. Some chick pulls her tit out in a video, you know, in a Super Bowl thing, rather. And it's like, who cares? It's kind of gross. It was stupid. You know, they did something, and it's over, you know? But to Hollywood, that cost people money. People were worried about sponsors pulling out. People were worried about losing commercial money. And they acted, man. They started chopping up sketches and removing bits, and everybody went on a panic. They were all sheep. They just went on this panic sheep run, banging into walls, tripping over themselves, trying to stop comedy.
How about the sketch that we wrote that they originally approved and they backed out of? We were going to do extreme sack fighting.
Yeah.
Remember that?
It was funny because I'll never forget the day that all went down. Between you, me, and all three of us, I didn't want to fucking be there either. It was the worst fucking thing I was around.
It was a bad energy, right?
It was terrible.
Bad energy.
And I'll never forget that. I went, they made me rehearse like jack-offs that they were, And the guy, Tom Giannis, came over, and, oh, it's hysterical. We love it. Then the next day I go there, and now everybody's talking about it. It was hysterical to see all these fucking educated white people walking around like they didn't know what the fuck to do. He's going to take his balls out, and he's going to run, and they're going to kill, and that's it. So
they all were arguing.
I mean, you should have seen
the direction we want to go in.
This is like a fucking horrid situation.
They did not want to. Joe pushed this through with all his might. Nobody wanted to do it.
This is not a direction we want to go in.
Oh,
I'm like,
God.
You hired me to do what I think is funny.
Oh,
you told me you
so
want to do some crazy
bad.
Shit. We're going to do some crazy shit.
And yeah. then they wanted me to be a juggy, a man juggy, and take a piss and show my crack. And I was like, this ain't going to happen.
When Joey came running out, yeah, they're like, we want to put him in makeup and everything. When Joey came running out, all bets were off.
So,
they had to shut up for at least that day.
So we had to shoot two episodes that day. We had to shoot two episodes. And I was going to run through both of them. But even after the first one, even after they seen the laughter, they were like, it's not going to happen. But what got me was, I'm not familiar with this environment. I'm a fucking stand-up comic at the time. I had done a couple things, but I wasn't familiar with the whole other side of this business.
Hollywood bullshit.
Which is lying.
Yeah.
So the guy who was telling me to my face how funny I am, I catch him when I get off stage telling the Comedy Central people that it was tasteless and he thought it was terrible and he's going to tell Rogan how my balls aren't funny. And
yep,
I bust a dude. And all of a sudden, I look at him and I fucking was raging. And as I'm at the end of the show, I'm outside. And what really happened was, because I don't give a fuck, I was smoking a joint with the security guard, with this black security guard. I whipped out a joint right on the set. You know me, I don't give a fuck. And me and this, the security guard's like, what you doing? I go, smoking. You want to? We went into a little nook and cranny on a Saturday. Remember, they taped on a Saturday.
Right, right.
And we sparked up and we got really fucking high. So now I walk in. I got to put up with all that cunt Judy Brown, all that shit. And I'll say this because I don't give a fuck. I walk in and the guy comes and he goes to me, that was hilarious. And I stopped and I go, how can you say that to me? How can you say that to me? I just seen you with my own eyes telling the people what. That it wasn't funny.
And he didn't see you when he was saying
all right, he didn't see me right. catching him. So I go, how can you fucking say that to me? He goes, I go, as a matter of fact, I'm going to go in there and tell Joe. And he goes, you're going to go tell Joe? So you're fired. And I go, really? Come here. And I fucking go to smack him. You know me, dog. I don't give a fuck. That guy's a pussy with his fucking bike. He's a white biker. I'll still smack you in the fucking mouth, punk. So he goes outside.
Aren't they all white?
Yeah, he thought he was bad to the bone with his bike. He's one of these bikers from Malibu, bro. He could suck my dick. So the funny thing is, he's outside by the pipe. That's when I went to hit him, by the pipe. And he hit his head with the pipe. And we're outside, and he's sitting there like, I'm not going back unless Joe Diaz leaves. You're a fucking man. And you're sitting by a pipe like a little fucking girl. And all of a sudden, my main man had to come up to me, Jeff Sussman. He goes, hey, man, they don't want you on the lot. I might as well, I got to escort you off the lot. And I remember, I go, Sussman, walk me over there. And I went over there, put my hand on. The guy wouldn't put his hand on. And I go, fuck you, bitch. And he just looked at me like he was a tough guy with his friends. And I remember he looked at the security guard to throw me out. He looks at the security guard, and the security guard is like, we just smoked a joint, bitch.
Yeah,
I got his back.
It was very unfortunate. He was very political and very, very deceptive.
Dog, he did me a favor.
Yeah, no, he didn't. He didn't.
I didn't give a fuck.
We fucked up. I fucked up in a bunch of different ways on that show, but I fucked up with him. I did not know he was that guy. I thought he was a different guy. You know, once he got in, he wanted to do it his way. He decided that he was running shit, and it was a real problem.
Remember the day one, we walk in, and we think that we have two episodes already done. Look, we've done all these sketches. That's about two episodes worth. So we walked in. He goes, we got all these episodes ready to go. Let's do them. They said, nah, you got to write some new shit. Forget about that. That's too crazy. We're not going to do that shit. Start over. So right.
Well, it's not that simple.
I'm simplifying it.
They
had
a bunch of sketches they had already prepared.
Of course. That's what
I'm
saying.
There that
so this was day fucking one. And day one, they put me in a room with Chris McGuire, and they go, write some jokes about Miami. We're going to go to Miami. So now I feel like I'm at high school all day. We're trying to come up with these ideas. I'm like, fuck, we have all these other ideas that are, what the fuck are we? Right there, I'm new. Like, this is day one, the first hour. I'm like, oh, shit. By the fucking time that nightmare day ended, Joe was there all day too. I go, Joe, man, I just can't fucking write here. They're ignoring all the other sketches that we did. And you were like, yeah, man, I can't write here either. I mean, I had a writer's block here too. It's just not the right environment. So that day, you told Giannis and the producers, hey, me and Eddie are going to write at home. We're going to relax. That's when all the creative juices come out. They said, go ahead. Get the fuck out of here. We'll still pay them. They just wanted to get rid of me. So I only worked there the first day. And all after that was working at home. My job was, I had to write, you know, we got together a lot too, but he was really busy with Fear Factor. So if we couldn't get together, I'd write at home. I'd have to have at least one sketch a day. So I'm at home. Meanwhile, I'm training for Abu Dhabi, going, oh my God, this is not what I thought it was going to be. Fuck, I just quit my strip job, strip DJ job for 10 years. Now I know this isn't going to last. Day one's a disaster. I'm like, oh my God, either the show's going to get canceled because they were green lighting a bunch of bullshit. Every now and then, occasionally, something would be funny, like the Decapisac thing, the Doug Stanhope. That was hilarious.
What we needed to do with that show was we needed to have control of it. Doug had to have control of it. Yeah. And we had to have a producer that was on the same page. And the other problem we had with that show was that it was the man show. We should have been doing our own show. We should not have been taking over someone else's show. That's stupid. Yeah. To me, it was like a prepackaged show that was like it was easy. It was like, you know, being on Fear Factor, I didn't really have the time to put something together. So this way, it'd be all put together. But it was a mistake. And it was disrespectful to those guys, Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla. I didn't even think it was at the time. I thought they had amicably parted ways because Jimmy wanted to do his talk show and Adam wanted to do his thing. But that wasn't the case. They didn't want the show to continue. They didn't want anybody else to do it. And it was their thing, really. So we shouldn't have done it in the first place.
I can ask you a question. You know I love you to all my heart.
What?
Is the air conditioner close by, dog? There's like a fucking yoga class in here. Let's put this thing a little colder, dog.
It's out in the hallway. I can go out in the hallway. Sweating. We're going to end in a couple minutes anyway.
You're sweating profusely.
I'm not sweating at all.
You got sweat on your fucking nose.
No, I don't.
Or is that shiny?
Dude, there's no sweat on my nose.
You got makeup on, cocksucker?
I got glistening.
God,
I put some glistening oils.
I would have put that shit on.
I want to look slippery.
What time is it?
It's almost 5 o'clock, or 4 o'clock, rather.
Oh, I'm right.
You wanted to go to 420 symbolically? Want to end this at 420?
Well, whatever. I don't give a fuck.
You're going to hang in there with 20 minutes without air conditioning?
It's too fucking hot. Oh, fuck.
Think about what McCain went through in Nam.
I don't give a fuck with that cocksucker. That was his choice. You know what I'm saying? I came up here to a house. I thought you had the air on.
Who's this? Air's on, man. It's really
so nice. You know what? We didn't even really talk about the UFC, man.
Well, let's do it.
What the fuck?
Oh, yeah. Well, we might as well, right? What did you think about BJ and Frankie Edgar? I thought, you know, BJ, the game plan, like when they were in between corners, they didn't seem to have a game plan. The game plan was like kick his ass. You know, the game plan was like there was no leg kicks. You know, I mean, I want to see way more leg kicks. I thought he can land leg kicks. He's landing them. And every one of those leg kicks takes a spring out of your step. You're dealing with a guy who can't. You can't catch him. He's so fast. Frankie Edgar's a lightning bolt. He's all over the place.
Yeah, he's too fast, man.
But he was able to land leg kicks. BJ landed a bunch of leg kicks when he tried. Yeah. But the attempts were not that many. Yeah. I know it takes a lot of energy, but he should have been throwing a lot more leg kicks.
I think BJ tried his fucking ass off. Look at the fifth round. He went after him. I just think Frankie Edgar is that good.
Oh, no
he's
doubt.
He's so fast. He never gets tired. He could do 25 rounds. Yeah. He never gets tired incredible. So fast. His wrestling is top notch. His striking is amazing. He's hard to hit. He's hard to get a hold of.
Not taking anything away from Frankie. I just thought BJ's game plan, it just didn't.
The game plan, I don't agree with his advice, the advice in the corner. I don't know.
There wasn't any advice. They were just giving him saying kick his ass.
Whatever that advice or whatever you want to call it.
I don't know this from that, but that the last two fights against whatever, that was not the same guy seen against Diego Sanchez. There's something more there.
Yeah, it could be a lack of motivation. It could be, you know, he needs to mix things up.
Well, the difference between
the camp.
The difference between Frankie Edgar's stand-up and Diego Sanchez's stand-up.
Huge.
Come on. It's a huge difference.
But that's his but you don't understand.
BJ hurt Diego early on in the fight too. That fight was a rout.
It was perfect for BJ.
BJ didn't have any fucking tenacity in the
BJ was
in the two Frankie.
Well, it could be because Frankie Edgar counters that tenacity with his speed.
Yeah.
It could be that BJ got frustrated and you know, he gets a little disheartened.
We're seeing some evolution. We're seeing an amazing wrestler with serious stand-up because for the longest time, BJ had the best hands at lightweight. No one was fucking with BJ. He was the best boxer. Now Frankie Edgar looks like his technique. I mean, it's totally different, but it seems like he's just too fast, too good. He's working too hard, and I think, you know, maybe BJ might, you know, a switch, like you mentioned, a switch of camps maybe might not hurt or add something new or something.
I think Frank Yeager's kicking it to a whole nother level athletically, speed-wise, endurance-wise, the way he can move.
His training camp must be insane.
He's a fucking worker,
man. He's a machine.
He's one of those little dudes you can't fuck with. Someone's been fucking with him all of his life, and he built up a level of tenacity that not that many people can handle.
His mentality is fucking perfect.
Yeah, he's a fucking
wrestler.
He's got
like Randy Couture's mentality, you know what I mean? and his cardio and his endurance and his will.
But, you know, if you look at, like, the way he moves better than Randy.
Oh, no, no, for sure. I'm talking about the mental game.
And, you know, people are saying, oh, he's not stopping people. He's stopping some people. What you have to realize, though, is he's quite a bit smaller than everybody else in the division. He's 154 pounds for real, legit.
I think, ultimately, he's throwing with evil intentions.
Oh, yeah.
He just hasn't developed the power yet. But I believe, you know, within the next couple years, 2-3 years, maybe 5 years, he's going to be crushing people. Because he comes in to blast 100% now with BJ.
He hurt Veach, and Veach is a tough guy, you know. And he dropped him before he strangled him. And you know, his stand up when he was fighting with Sean Sherk, he totally out kickboxed Sean Sherk.
Yeah,
he's a bad motherfucker, dude. It's going to be interesting though, the rematch with Gray Maynard.
That's going to be very interesting.
Maynard's a hard guy to beat, man. Yeah, you know, you complain all you want about his style. The problem he presents problems. You know, what's the solution to that problem? You got to be able to stop him from taking you down, man. He's a powerful motherfucker, and he's a good wrestler.
Or you got to have a wicked fucking Dustin Hazlett guard or something, you know?
Even more than wicked than Dustin Hazlett, really, right? Because Dustin Hazlett couldn't do shit against Rick Story. You know, it's more, he needs like some fucking Aoki.
Well, he's going down to 55 because he should be there. Yeah. Clearly, Ricky Story was 3 times stronger than Dustin Hazlett.
Right, but so, you know, Josh Berkman's strong as fuck too, and Dustin had no problem with him.
Yeah, but I think Ricky Story is stronger than Josh Berkman, dude.
Yeah.
He went up, he's from Washington, and he's rolled with Gerald, one of my black belts, a lot, and Gerald he calls me to tell me about the roles with Ricky Story. He said he's fucking amazing.
He's a gorilla.
He's just so powerful and good. Very technical. You know, you're going to see him start to develop some finishing too. He's all into evolving and adding weapons to his game constantly. Ground
and he's young.
He's into that.
He's
young
and tenacious.
He's so powerful.
Better. Yeah.
And his fucking mental game, that guy goes in there and he loves to destroy.
Dude, when he attacked Hazlett up against the cage, he started ripping his body with punches. Like, man. It's very hard to deal with. You know, Hazlett was doing everything he could just to stay alive. This guy was just crushing him with punches. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
What do you think about Randy and Tony?
Frankie Edgar might need to... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish what you were saying.
Frankie Edgar might really need to take his guard game to the next level.
I was impressed with him off his back, man. I was impressed at how he recovered when BJ mounted him.
Yes.
Yeah.
BJ mounted him, got a hold of him, and
usually you're dead when BJ mounts you. BJ mounts you, it's usually over.
Frankie,
that's his shit.
Fucking, he's got so much energy, man. He just keeps pushing. He doesn't give up, man. He does not give up. You know, some guys rest. If BJ mounts you, you rest, and you're like, oh, fuck, now I got to get out of this. But let me bide my time for a big explosion. Frankie, the moment he got taken down was, move, I'm out. You know?
Yeah. Obviously, BJ's guard wasn't good enough to really threaten Frankie Edgar, really. I mean, Frankie Edgar has great defense. His jiu-jitsu is awesome, too. But what I did like about BJ is his guard recovery, his butterflies, and his foot on the hip control. God damn, it was really beautiful to see. And again, you know, he didn't really attack that much off his back, but his recovery is just amazing. He really uses his flexibility well. And when he had both his hips on Frankie Edgar, or both his feet on Frankie's hips, that's just serious, amazing Yoda control, you know.
Yeah, no, he's badass in controlling guys like that, but not enough to finish guys. It's weird that BJ is such a jiu-jitsu master, but yet he doesn't really finish guys off of his back. You know, he's had problems in a lot of fights where guys can take him down and hold him down. You know, that was obviously the problem in the George St. Pierre fight, and that was obviously the problem when Frankie Edgar took him down, too.
But that's a problem that is prevalent in...